Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right. Well, a very good January morning. Back to weather that feels a little bit more like it normally does in January in South Texas after all the freezing weather and potential damage and broken pipes and all sorts of fun things like that. But we're back to talk gardening for the next 3.5 hours. Got pretty much a pretty wide open phone bank. So if you'd like to get in early, avoid the lines, the busy signals a little bit later, you know the number, 210-599-5555. Hard live and local this morning. I was at a big gift market in Atlanta last week, but probably won't get another day off for quite some time. So anyway, whatever's on your mind, if you've got questions about the freeze or well, anything to plant. Some things I think is a little early on. People are planting anyway, but pick up the phone and give me a call, 210-599-5555. Just a couple of things I will mention. Great time to plant onions. Still very good onion planting time, and I know most nurseries have pretty good supply of good fresh onions, and I have no problem with putting those in the ground right now. Potatoes, it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a year choice thing. Kind of depends on what you think the weather is going to do. Potatoes are one of those plants that can freeze back two or three times and still come back out and perform very well. But, you know, by about the third time that they freeze back, they just start running out of energy. They stop coming back so strong. So I here in, well, I'm, of course, in the Hill Country, just north of San Antonio, but I usually wait until the middle of February to plant potatoes. Now, if you are down south, I mean, especially if you're listening down in Corpus or over in Victoria or points very far south of San Antonio, you are probably just fine to go ahead and plant your potatoes now. But if you're very far north of San Antonio, it's just, you know, take your choice. You plant, they come up. If they freeze back, like I say, they'll come back out again at least once, probably twice. But for me, it's not that long. Wait a couple of weeks and put them in, and you just won't have to worry about it. The process of planting potatoes, and we're talking about, you know, your standard baking potato or red skin potatoes, new potatoes. We're not talking about sweet potatoes. That is a totally different topic, and it's way too early to be thinking about sweet potatoes. But your regular potatoes, you generally want to get certified good, what they call seed potatoes. It has nothing to do with seeds, but it is how we start the plants. Problem is, if you just pick potatoes from the grocery store, they usually treat them. They used to flash freeze them, which kind of destroyed the little eyes. Now they use chemicals to treat them so that those eyes don't sprout, because nobody wants to go to the grocery store, at least not many people, and buy potatoes with eyes that are starting to sprout. So don't get the ones from the grocery store. Even if you should get ones that the eyes have started to sprout, you're not real sure what they've been treated with. So just go to a good nursery or garden center or whoever offers sweet potatoes for sale, sweet potatoes, you know, good potatoes for sale that have not been treated. The other thing about the certification, there are lots of potato diseases, and certified means that they are certified to be blight free, and they're, you know, they're not really any more expensive than what you're going to buy at the grocery store to eat. So certified seed potatoes are what you want to get, and that's what most nurseries will be carrying. What you do with those certified sweet potatoes is you cut them into smaller sections. Try to leave at least two eyes per section. And then you want to cauterize, kind of seal all those cut edges on the potatoes. Now, there are two things that you can use for a lot of years. I just use ashes out of the fireplace or out of my iron stoves. If you want to use ashes, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. They seem to grow very good potatoes. I found, though, a few years ago that rolling them in rock phosphate, I thought, gave me even better plants and gave me more potatoes long term. So either fireplace ashes or rock phosphate, plant them with little pieces of potato so that they are about, those pieces of potato are about an inch below the surface of the ground. Cover them back over and go ahead and water them in very good, and you'll be off to a good start. Now, once again, I don't recommend necessarily putting a layer of rock phosphate underneath them. I just roll the cut potatoes in that. When I'm preparing my soil, I do usually work a little bit of fertilizer in beforehand. But anyway, that's basically the process of planting regular potatoes. We'll talk more about growing them and harvesting them, but Raul called, and I hate to keep people waiting, so let's say good morning, Raul.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Morning, sir.
Hey, I am calling from Plano, Texas.
Okay.
I've often wanted to, you know, it's funny, I listened to your show at 5:30, and then, you know, I'm like, yeah, I should call in, and then it gets to about, it'd be about 7:30.
And it's a little harder to call in, and we're got a lot more commercials to deal with. Well, I'm glad you got up early this morning.
Well, I you know, I'm always up and listening. It's just so interesting that I just keep forgetting about my questions. But
well, very so, good. Whatever. I'm glad you called.
Great, great. Well, I've got two questions for you, if we can.
Sure.
And the first one, I don't know if you've ever gotten this question before, but my backyard is facing north.
And it's actually,
and it's kind of an L shape. And it's common Bermuda,
mm-hmm.
and except for the patch that's closest to the corner, the inside corner of the L-shaped house, of the house,
Okay.
That one just gets so much shade that it had, like, let's say, I want to say there's a 10 by 10 space that is crabgrass.
All right.
And at first, I started to pull it out because I'm like, crabgrass, who wants that? But now, you know, because I have three little kids, they're, you know, they traffic on the grass a lot.
And the bud issue.
Yeah. And so my question is, how do I get the crabgrass to grow back? Because it, you know, it's not that it was that ugly anyway. It was just, to me, you know, like, oh, that's crabgrass. But we've had St. Augustine in a previous house, and it's a little bit like it. I mean, it's closer to that than common Bermuda, right? But
sure,
uglier
sure.
is mud, right?
Well,
or is there something better that I could put on where the kids can run over? Because the thing is that they have to go through this part to get in and out of the house.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, if you want something green there, I would not recommend trying to regrow your crabgrass, because it's gonna weak grass. It's gonna be gone as soon as the weather starts warming up. And when it approaches the time that it starts dying back, it starts getting spots on the leaves and mildew on the leaves and everything else. So, if you want something green that's gonna last up till probably the middle of June, and then let you make a different decision, you could get some ryegrass from a nursery somewhere. I prefer what they call perennial rye. It's not going to be perennial, but it's going to last much later into the summer than crabgrass would, and certainly later than the old nasty Oregon ryegrass does. And that's something you can plant. It'll sprout and grow within a few days, and it will give you nice green grass that's going to be pretty much mud-free until probably the middle of June. The second option, if you want something green, is to just go out and get some squares of St. Augustine. I'm not sure I would recommend, well, I guess for the shady area up there, you should be fine with either the variety called Palmetto or the variety called Del Mar. Those are the two that are most shade tolerant. You go ahead and put them down, roll them this time of year, and they'll start growing roots. They'll really start putting on new growth as soon as we get into some consistently warm weather. But if you want some that you're only going to have to do once, either Palmetto or Del Mar St. Augustine would probably be the best choice to put in there. Now, the other choice is to plant ground cover of some sort, like Asian jasmine. Put some stepping stones through there and just tell the kids, hey, run on the stepping stones, not on the ground cover. And once again, there's your permanent solution. I'm not sure that even if you were going to go back and plant something green like your perennial ryegrass, you might think about putting some flagstones in there anyway. It's just going to keep the grass a lot nicer looking. Kids should think it's fun to jump from stone to stone or hop from stone to stone or whatever we all did as kids playing those games. But those, in my opinion, are your choices. If you just want something green, if you want the minimum of effort, if you don't want to spend over $10 or so, go out and get some good perennial ryegrass and plant that, water it, and it's going to last you up until the weather starts getting hot. If you really want to be one and done with it, you know, put your flagstones down and then either plant Palmetto or Del Mar St. Augustine or a ground cover. Last choice, which I don't really recommend, would be to plant something put down something like mulch or decayed granite. The problem with that is kids are going to track that in the house. It's not as bad as mud, but the decayed granite, as nice as it is, will scratch up most floor surfaces. So those would be my last choices. Mulch is not a bad choice, but you'll have to refresh it periodically. But anyway, yeah, I hope that helps you on that issue.
Yeah, I hadn't thought that route of the St. Augustine because so we've been in this house for 8 years now.
Uh-huh.
And that little patch, or little, I mean 10 by 10, right? That's not
right.
So little. It was doing, the crabgrass was doing well until I started pulling it.
right.
And it kept to itself in that little area. And I would say that area gets about 10, or maybe 1 hour of sunlight.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Run hour direct sunlight and bright shade the rest of the day.
How do you define bright shade?
Bright enough to cast a shadow, but not direct sun.
Oh, I see. That's a good question, because the shadow is obviously from the house.
Right.
And I noticed that, when we have our little ice storms here, sometimes,
right,
the last part that melts.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's to be expected. But St. Augustine is a fairly shade-tolerant grass, and it's just, if you want a grass, it would be the absolute best choice. If you want another ground cover, you could plant English ivy if you wanted to. It will tend to grow up, you know, up the side of your house and some other places, but it's totally cold hardy and very happy in a shady area like that. And that would be another ground cover you could plant. But again, you need to put some flagstones or something in there and tell the kids not to run on the ivy. But, those are just what your green choices are.
I see. Would clover last much? I guess probably not, right? Be trampled.
No, it won't make it through the hot weather. It's beautiful during the cool weather, but heat's gonna kill it back.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you. That really helps.
Very good.
I had a feeling you weren't gonna tell me how to grow the crabgrass, but
well, you just throw some fertilizer and water out, and the crabgrass will come back. But again, it's going to die out with the first hot weather, and it's going to look really nasty for a while before it gets there. So I really wouldn't encourage you to fall in love with crabgrass. It just has too many negative qualities. And first thing you know, the seeds will be coming up all out in your Bermuda grass and everywhere else, because it does tend to seed profusely before it dies out.
Okay. Yeah, I was just kind of puzzled by the fact that it's, you know, it has lasted many summers until I started pulling it. But
well, again, crabgrass is kind of a generic term, That might not be what you're actually looking at. You might want to take a sample of it to a reputable nursery. I don't know Plano anymore. You used to have a nursery out there called Spring Creek Gardens, but that was a long time ago when I lived in the Dallas area. And but anyway, you can always take a little sample of it to somebody that knows and let them take a look and tell you what it is. It may be there are other grasses that many people consider weeds but are more perennial, so might want to check and be sure what it was you had.
That's true. Okay, because like I said, it's still 2/3 there. It's just the other third is mud now.
So. Sure, I understand. And those little feet will always find the mud, and will always track it in the house, which can, shall we say, lead to domestic discord, which we don't want to hear about.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay. So I'll move on to my second question, if it's okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, and you were talking something about this similar with potatoes, but I was going to ask you about ginger on the Dirt Doctor's website.
Right.
It talks about if you want to plant ginger, buy it this time of year.
Uh-huh.
You know, a root or something. I forget what you call it. I guess it's a root. And then chop it up where there's at least one individual eye on each piece.
Okay. We call them tubers rather than roots, but
many
gingers grow as an underground rhizome like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, rhizome. That's right. And then roll it around in some wood ashes, which we have plenty of, and then store them in a paper bag, I guess, in the garage until when it's time to plant them. Does that sound right?
You can do that, but. There are many, many different kinds of ginger, and of course the one you're probably interested in is the one that you can, that is edible, absolutely wonderful on sushi and with sushi and things like that. But we're getting not that far away from the season that you could, go ahead and put it in the ground. It's going to freeze back in the fall every year, and if you get a real cold winter, and you've had some pretty cold weather just like we have this winter, you can actually, the rhizomes actually can rot in the ground. So I would either plan on digging your rhizomes in the fall, storing them as you described. I don't know that I would cut them up. I'd cut the tops back. I'd cut the roots back. Rolling them in wood ashes is not a bad idea at all. But store them until the ground begins to spring in the winter and then replant. Now, just again, be sure you're getting the right ginger, because there are some wonderful, colorful gingers that are grown as perennials. There are other plants that are called ginger, which really are not gingers at all, but are grown strictly for ornamental purposes. So if you want to, if you want to grow ginger that you can periodically harvest some of the rhizomes and, use for culinary purposes, you're fine. I wouldn't, if you have a ready source of it, I don't see much reason to buy it and store it until planting time. I would wait till a little closer to planting time and then cut those rhizomes into reasonable size sections, roll them in the wood ashes, and stick them in the ground. So many times things get stuck in the closet and forgotten, and either the planting season slips away or you go back to get them out and you find they've shriveled and haven't done so well. So I certainly encourage you to try growing some ginger, but I wouldn't be in any hurry to buy and store the rhizomes. I'd wait till a little closer to planting season, which in Plano probably going to be mid-March or early April, not that far away actually.
Okay, so let's say, okay, so I am starting from scratch. I don't have any, so
yeah.
I would go to like some kind of whole foods type of
Whole Foods, natural grocers, somewhere that hasn't been highly treated with chemicals, and just get your, it's going to look, are you familiar with what they call flag iris or German iris? The rhizome's going to look a lot like an iris rhizome, and that's what you're going to get.
Okay, and which are the better gingers to buy?
You just want what will be sold as culinary or edible ginger.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I don't really know ginger varieties. I don't know. I'm sure If you lived in Japan, you'd probably have your choice of, you know, 20 different strains of ginger that you could grow in pots over there. But you're just going to want to go to the deli section or wherever in a store that offers good fresh produce. You might even find it at a farmer's market, but that's what you're going to get. There are also, I'm sure, places to buy it online.
Great. So let's say I choose April, I go get one, Arizum, and I can chop it up like we mentioned earlier. And
yeah, don't chop it too small. I mean, the individual little pieces probably should be at least a couple of inches long. So you're not going to slice and dice it up too much, but then you're going to roll it in your wood ashes, let those cut ends cauterize before you plant it. But that's the basic process.
Okay. And then how much sun should it be in?
The more sun, the more flavorful it will be.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And that goes for most herbs and vegetables. There are a handful of edible things you can grow in the shade, but most of them don't do as well and do not develop, you know, as much flavor.
Okay. And pots are okay for that?
Sure. Yeah, grow them. I grow it in a good size pot, you know, practically a whiskey barrel size pot. You'll have trouble keeping it evenly watered if you grow it in too small a pot. And, you know, as you well know, Plano has hot, dry summers, just like you occasionally have wet, cold winters. So it's easier to maintain in the ground. But again, some climates have such a short growing season, people grow it in pots so that they can start it early, drag it inside, and continue to harvest even after it's gotten too cold to get it to be in the ground. Now, I've never visited Japan, but have a number of friends who have and friends who have lived there, and it is overall may not get as severely cold as we do, but most areas that I know of and hear of have a longer, colder winter and a much shorter growing season.
Okay. Hey, I have a thank you so much for that. I appreciate
Certainly.
It. I'm really looking forward to this. We love ginger, so I thought, why not? We grow other things. Let's try that. Try this.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And, you know, don't eliminate some of the other gingers. If you like flowers, there's some ornamental gingers that have absolutely gorgeous flowers. There are some very tropical forms that you would see in Hawaii in places, the so-called torch gingers that are going to, you'd have to grow them about like you would an anthurium or something that just won't take any cold at all. But the family of plants that are called ginger is quite large, and the ones that are edible make up a very small portion of that genus.
Hey, I have a quick report, update. Last April, I want to say, I planted some Calibrachoa in the front, in front of the house, in a couple planters, and they finally gave out a couple weeks ago.
Wow. Yeah. It is. And, it's been just an unusual year. It looked like we were going to be in for a very mild winter, and Calibrachoa and a lot of other things that normally would be gone with the first frost were continuing to grow and bloom. Here in San Antonio, we have periwinkles all over the place still, but it only took one night, and I think San Antonio got down to maybe 15 degrees. Hill Country, where I live, got down to maybe 12 degrees, but it sure ended our very pleasant, warm growing season in a very quick fashion.
Yeah, I was surprised they survived that hot summer, but and then I thought finally they made it to the season they like. And
sure,
but you know,
well, and under an organic program, it's amazing how many things, you know, how many things will do that much better. So you did well. Plant them again this spring, and after we get past the danger of a really hard freeze, and enjoy them. They're a beautiful plant.
Hey, Bob, enjoy your weekend. I really appreciate your help.
My pleasure, Raul. I really appreciate your call this morning. Thank you. All right, let's take just a couple of minutes here before news time. And by the way, there are open lines, so grab one if you'd like, 210-599-5555. Just a couple more things about growing potatoes. I just got through telling you how to plant potatoes before we talked to Raul. And they're going to come up. They're going to make a very leafy plant. Some people do what is called banking, and that is just piling dirt up around the plants as they grow. These are not perennials, and piling the dirt up around them is not going to shorten their lives that much. I know we always talk about not burying things any deeper, but with potatoes, a lot of people do this because the potatoes develop fairly close to the surface. I have not found that that gives me any more potatoes or any better potatoes than just letting them grow and develop normally. The one thing that you do need to watch is if you actually see the surface of a developing potato at the top of the ground, you do need to cover it, because if that potato is exposed to sunlight, it starts developing chlorophyll, the green pigment, and that pretty much spoils it as an edible potato. So if you start seeing potatoes that are so close to the surface you can actually see them, then put some mulch or some dirt over them. But whether you actually bank them, whether you put 3 or 4 or 5 inches of dirt over them, I've never found that that really gives you better potatoes or increases the number, so it's strictly up to you. But beyond that, you just water them and fertilize them, care for them as you would everything else in your garden. After they've been in about and growing about 6 or 8 weeks, if you like, you can take your finger and start probing around in the soil at the base of the plant, and you'll be able to feel the potatoes. And you can literally just, you know, with your index finger, you can pop little golf ball sized potatoes out, and they're absolutely delicious. That's what you buy in the grocery store, is new potatoes, and a lot of different ways you can cook them and enjoy them. And the plant will go on making more potatoes, especially right underneath the base of the plant. Now, obviously, you don't want to take out every little potato you feel growing, but and then just water them, fertilize them, let them grow. As we get into the summer months, the top will begin to die back. At that point, you can go ahead and dig them, and you will find lots of potatoes, probably of varying sizes, easy to grow, and lots of fun. We'll do more gardening and more calls right after the news here on KTSA Radio San Antonio.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now, 210-599-5555.
And I do have a couple of lines open. You're getting in line right behind Mike and Julie, but let's just go right straight back to those calls. And Mike is up first. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Bob.
Morning, sir.
I've got some canker spots on my peach tree limbs.
Uh-huh.
And before I just cut the limbs off or tried to cut the cankers out of there, but I was just wondering if you knew of, or is there any like a fungicide or anything like that that'll work, that I could put on those cankers to help the peach tree
Most of the cankers are not caused by a fungus, so fungicides wouldn't do any good. Some of them are bacterial. Some of them are caused by insects. Now, cankers are a sign that the tree is a little stressed, so first thing I would do is check the base of the tree, be sure your root flare is exposed, pretty much follow what Howard Garrett calls a sick tree treatment, which you'll find on his webpage at dirtdoctor.com. But if they are indeed caused by insects, you can make a moderately strong solution of orange oil, probably 3 or 4 ounces to a gallon. Spray that directly on the bark, directly on the canker. And that'll even kill borers under the bark, which is another very common problem with peach trees. But generally speaking, if you'll alleviate whatever's stressing them, and of course last summer's heat and drought were very stressful to all the trees, but if you take the stress away, the trees will tend to outgrow most of the cankers, and you really don't have to do a whole lot beyond that. Doesn't affect the fruit and doesn't affect the flowering, so this is not a, you know, not an emergency thing you need to get out there and do. Sure, it's unsightly, but it's kind of like mistletoe. Generally, you take away the stress from the tree and the cankers become much less of an issue, and I certainly wouldn't be out there spraying with strong chemicals because they aren't going to do any good.
Okay, so fertilize it. Well, make sure that I've got mulch around, you know, all of the trees and around, you know,
Pull it back from the trunk. Mulch is to go over the root zone. But anyway, dig down. The base of that tree should begin to flare out, just like an oak tree or an elm or something else would.
Good
fertilizer. Maybe put a little azomite on. Peaches are very susceptible to nutrient deficiencies, but depending on the size of the tree, you know, 1 to 4 or 5 cups around. But again, that root flare exposure is probably the single most important thing. Beyond that, just very deep, thorough watering whenever that soil's dry an inch deep.
Okay. All right. One other quickie is going back to your potatoes.
Yeah.
In the past, whenever I've already bought my potatoes and everything, so I'm not going to put them in the ground for another three weeks, probably something like that. But heretofore, I'd always put them in peat moss. But I didn't get any peat moss, but I put them in garden soil, and got them inside so the eyes can grow and everything. Will that be all right to put them in that garden soil like that?
The eyes are very, very delicate. You're going to find it's almost impossible to cut them up, to cauterize them like you need to. If you allow the eyes to develop, I would just, you know, keep them in a paper bag in the refrigerator, not in the freezer, but just keep them chilled so that you really don't want the eyes to grow in advance because just bump those the slightest little bit, they start, you know, they snap right off and you have to start over with them. So at this point, I would just store them dry. And like I say, keep them, you know, 46 to 50 degrees or so, which is about what the vegetable section in your refrigerator usually is. And remember that, you know, you don't have to wait till we're past the danger of a freeze. It's going to take your potatoes about a week or 10 days to sprout. And if we should get a late freeze and they freeze down, they'll come back out at least once or twice. So it's not like a tomato plant. If it freezes, it's dead. You can gamble a little bit with potatoes. If they freeze down, they'll come right back out because there are other little eyes that you don't even see called adventitious, spots that will come out and grow. So, are you here in the San Antonio area?
No, I'm in the Hill Country.
Here in the Hill Country, yeah, you're probably about three weeks away from the prime time to plant.
Because the soil temperature right now is too cool. If I put them in the ground right now, they'll rot, won't they?
Probably not, but I worry about them because we're going to get some sunny days this week, and Hill Country fortunately is a lot more moist than it has been. But because most areas, I got 1.88 inches of rain, but some areas got 3 and 4 and 5 inches of rain. So I wouldn't plant them while the soil is still this wet. But we're just 2 to 3 weeks away from ideal planting time.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just wait then. Okay, Bob, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Thank you, sir. Goodbye. Next in line is Julie. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My call is about varieties of vegetables, and the first one is asparagus.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give me some ideas of what varieties to get of asparagus?
There are lots of different varieties out there. I still think the old Mary Washington, which has been around for probably longer than we have, I've not found a variety that produces better or, you know, has any better flavor. So I'm a fan of the old Mary Washington, not Martha Washington, but Mary Washington. Martha Washington's a geranium. But the old Mary Washington asparagus is what, you know, I've always planted and grown. And I've tried the, you know, UC, some of the University of California's. I've tried the purple ones. They just don't produce as consistently or as productively.
So how many years does a plant last? When do you need to renew them?
25, 30 years probably. Mm-hmm. They're perennial, and unless they get abused somehow by, you know, Mother Nature getting just too hot and dry, or if they just get overtaken with Bermuda grass, asparagus lives and very productive for a lot of years.
Do they need a special soil, or they grow pretty good in just the hill country soil?
Garden soil, you know, hill country soil. Some parts of the area just don't have much soil, and they don't want just pure caliche. But the same soil that you plant your tomatoes or peppers in, your asparagus would love.
Okay, peach tree, what's the good variety of them for up by Pipe Creek?
You want a peach tree that's going to be somewhere in the 650 to 750 chill hour range. You don't want the Fredericksburg varieties, but you want something 650 to 750. There are lots of good ones. If you want a white-meated peach, Melba is a very good variety. If you want a yellow-meated peach, June Gold is going to be probably your best. If you're right on the borderline of Sam Houston, most, you know, you're Sam Houston, and Sam Houston's a big peach. It's probably the biggest peach you're going to do well with. Every now and then you'll have a year where it fulfills its chilling hours a little too early and tries to bloom early, but probably June Gold, Melba, those are going to be my top two choices, depending on whether you want a yellow flesh or a white flesh.
So is it too late to plant a peach tree?
Absolutely not. It's this is prime time for planting peach trees. Just, you know, be sure you plant them with the root flare beginning right there at the top of the ground. There are some people, including some people that write columns and things that shouldn't, that tell you to plant it down as deep as the graft is. No, that graft point, which will be very obvious, that's probably going to be 3 or 4 inches out of the ground, and that's the way you want it.
Okay. What about onions?
Onions,
white
still
onions, yeah.
Still plenty of time.
Variety.
If you want the biggest, sweetest onion, you want what they call the 1019s, or just Texas Super Sweet is the other, 1014, I believe is what it is. But the Texas Super Sweet, and the only problem with those, they probably make the biggest onions, but they don't keep as well because they have so much sugar in them that they just don't have as good lasting quality. The standard white onions, white Bermuda, Granax, those are fine. The yellow onions are fine. The purples are fine. But the one that most people plant is at 1015. I'm getting the name right. But that's the biggest, one of the sweetest, most delicious onions. But it's only going to keep about 3 to 4 months. Whereas some of the other varieties, like your Granax, your Bermudas, those, they can be kept for up to 8 or 9 months, and they'll keep a long time. Just depends on how long you plan on storing them and exactly what flavor you like.
Yeah, I like a little bit of the spicier.
Yeah, yeah, you probably want, you know, any of the good white or purple onions, but there's one called Granax, the old white Bermuda. They're, I wouldn't really pay a whole lot of attention to varieties. I just pay attention to the color. And like I say, your yellow onions going to be a little sweeter. Your white onions going to be probably have the most tang to them. The purple ones are going to lie somewhere in the middle.
Okay. What about garlic?
garlic. just about any of the garlics will grow well. There are what they call hard-necked garlics, and there are literally dozens of varieties and soft-necked garlics. I like the soft-necks better, and quite honestly, you can buy them at a nursery, and that's just fine, but in the past, when they've been a little harder to get, I've just bought them at, you know, Whole Foods or natural grocers and planted and done very well with them. Now, you can plant garlic anytime. If you want the big pods of garlic, you need to get them in the ground soon. November is when we usually plant them, but it's never too late to plant garlic.
Okay, so where would I pick up this Mary Washington asparagus?
Most any good nursery is going to have it in stock. I know, you know, we keep it in stock here at Shades of Green. I'm sure Fanix has it. Places like Rainbow Gardens, just any good nursery. I would not trust the box stores or, you know, Tractor Supply. But any good nursery should have good asparagus plants right now.
So do y'all have the onion?
I'll be honest with you. I just got back from 10 days out of town at the big international gift market, and I haven't even walked out back to see what's still out there. Normally we do, but why don't you call about 9 o'clock this morning and get somebody to run out and take a look, and we can tell you exactly what we have. I'll put it this way. We should have it, and somebody's going to get fussed at if we don't, but it's possible somebody came in and cleaned us out yesterday, but should have it
That's
in stock.
A good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure, Julie. Thank you. All right, time to pause for a minute here, and I get to talk to you about Medina Agriculture. And once again, since we've talked in a little bit about plant fruit trees and vegetables and onions and things like that, you know, the Medina fertilizer that we put on the grass, what they call their growing green, that works very, very well in the vegetable garden as well. I like putting it down before you plant. Now, after the plant things are up and growing, I'll follow up with a little bit of Medina's Has to Grow fertilizer, their liquid fertilizer. But Medina makes so many fine products, and even though we think of them as things we use in the landscape, these things work extremely well in the vegetable garden, in the orchard, in the flower beds as well. And putting down that dry granular fertilizer before you plant, that really does get things off to a good start. If you've not gotten around to feeding your landscape, though, you need to do it soon. Plants are not able to instantly use the fertilizers. Fertilizers need to be acted upon by the microbes in the soil. So if you want that strong burst of growth, if you want things coming back from whatever freeze damage you may have suffered the past couple of weeks, get your fertilizer on your landscape. And that Medina growing green, you're just not going to find anything any better. Those houseplants that are a little tired of being inside, some of the ones that you would normally keep out on the porch or patio, well, whether they stay inside or go out, the Medina Has to Grow plant is a wonderful formulation to feed them with. I actually alternate that with the Medina, they call their new liquid fish blend, and boy, does it grow things well. You ought to see all the flowers in my orchid house. Anyway, Medina makes a lot of good things. If you're trying to speed up the action in your compost pile, you want some Medina Plus or Medina Soil Activator, you want to use those same products for softening your soil, use them on a monthly basis. First thing you know, your soil will make you think you're in East Texas. Medina makes a lot of fine products. If you want to check them all out, simply go to MedinaAg.com or visit a good dealer that carries quality products. Find things from Medina Agriculture.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening on a nice January morning. You're not going to have to be wearing the long underwear today. Probably just a light jacket. It's going to be a great day to get out and get some things done in the yard and in the garden and just enjoy some good South Texas weather. Looks like my next three callers are Turkey Tom, Juanita, and Nancy. Turkey Tom's first in line. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Bob. How are you today?
Off to a good start. How about yourself?
Oh, doing okay. Glad this cold weather has hit the road, and I hope it don't come back.
You and me both. It's a little colder than we needed and a lot longer than we needed. The only nice thing about it, I can say, is if that's what brought the rain, well, I'll put up with it because the rains were certainly nice and more widespread probably than they've been in a couple of years. So the weather did something nice for us and some not-so-nice things to us, so we'll just get on with it.
Yes, sir. Well, hey, I was wondering, is it too late to spread compost for sticker burrs?
No, sir. Still be a good time. You can bet that anything that had sprouted froze. I guess that's one nice thing about having it get that cold. But I would get your compost out as soon as you can.
Okay. That's good to know, because I did not get a chance in November or December, and next thing I know, it's almost February, and the calendar flew by.
It's like you blink twice, and Anyway, it has, the time has flown by, and who knows, we're looking at weather with highs, 60, low 60s, and nights in the 40s. That's gonna keep those seeds dormant a little bit longer, give your, all the humic acids and things that are in the compost time to destroy that seed before it sprouts. But, I wouldn't put it off too much longer. You know, there have been lots of years by Valentine's Day, we were truly into warm weather, and so just soon as it's in the budget and in the energy budget as well as the financial budget, go ahead and get it spread.
Okay, I appreciate that. I have a terrible pest, Bob. It's one of the worst pests. I have chickens that just destroy the mulch around my trees and around my blackberry plants and everything. I had an idea, and you tell me if this is a bad idea, but could I put my normal mulch around everything and then put plastic over it, like a white plastic, and kind of hold it down?
I would definitely not use plastic. If you use some sort of woven material, you can certainly do that, but plastic totally cuts off oxygen, and your compost, if it goes anaerobic, it's going to start to stink, and it's not going to do all the things you want it to do. So anything that, you know, any woven material, obviously not a tarp or something like that, but, you know, an old bed sheet, an old blanket, almost anything like that. You just want to continue to have the oxygen available to all the microbes in the compost. So no plastic, no weed blocks or things like that that are dense.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I can probably find something that would work for that.
And the good old insulate fabric that we use to help with protecting things from the cold would be ideal for that purpose. But you don't want to leave it out, you know, all the way up into the summer months, because it won't last as long as you do if you do that. But if you use some of what they call floating rope cover, any of those things will be just fine. In fact, you might even find some old shade cloth. There's a website you can go to that's called Grower Supply. It's actually the same website for two companies, Grower Supply and Farm Tech. They have, shade cloth actually in varying densities and at very, very reasonable prices per square foot. If you find you're going to have to go out and buy something, and that's something you can put down and pick up and it'll last you many years.
Perfect. I appreciate that. One last question. So I'm tired of fighting my citrus trees. They're in the ground. And, you know, when we didn't have this cold weather spell for 30 years, it was pretty nice. But now it seems every year I'm having to bury them in mulch just to keep them alive. I mean, we hit 12 degrees here this year, and we hit 16 the year before and 9 the year before that.
Yep, you're preaching to the choir on that one. And I just, you know, I don't know what to think. I think that we're going to see a lot of changes in what people choose to plant. I'll just put it that way. Is this a permanent trend? You know, nobody knows. Anybody tries to predict the weather is crazy. I still want to know how the Farmer's Almanac got that right a year in advance when the meteorologist can't get it right 2 days in advance. But we have had three severe cold spells in 3 years now, and they're, you know, a lot of folks are going to be doing things a little differently. There are some citrus that are cold hardy. The satsumas will go down to 20 degrees, which is typically as cold as we get in the winter. But, man, my crystal ball is awful cloudy. I just don't know what to think about winter weather at this point.
Well, I was curious because I have them on the back side of a carport shop enclosed living space thing. And I was thinking about building a lean-to greenhouse over them. Would they bake during the summer, though? I mean, would I have to take the walls off? Would it get too hot during the summer?
You would have to give them some better air circulation during the summer. But there are a lot of commercial greenhouse growers that I deal with. They have a greenhouse that they literally roll the sides up on. Imagine a plastic material that just rolls down from the top down. then a pipe that runs the full length of that, in this case 40 and 50 foot hoop houses, as they're called. And it takes, you know, 30 seconds for a guy to go out, take the one end of it, and just roll it up. And, you know, you roll up this whole side of the greenhouse, and then it has, like, most of them have, like, a little handle sticking out. You just take a link of chain or something and put over that. So it's very easy to uncover and cover. Now, most, even the better greenhouse plastics, are only going to last like 3 years, so this is something you're going to have to replace periodically. But it's not expensive, it's not a lot of work to do, and you can grow, you know, very good plants that way. I had a friend years ago that actually, you know, built a greenhouse over his grapefruit tree, and he was harvesting 2 bushels of grapefruit every winter. So yes, it's very practical, so long as this is a sunny area. But it is a little bit of work, and just don't be like me. Don't head out backpacking the 1st of June or something like that and not have anybody to roll it up when it gets hot.
Well, I think if I do this, I'm going to, you know, put the cover down in, like, October and lift it and lower it. But then once March comes, that cover is basically going to roll up and not drop back down.
Well, and that's a very reasonable thing to do, and there are lots of different ways to do it. I tend to do that with shade cloth over a portion of my vegetable garden that I don't want to get so hot in the summer. I just put it up with zip ties, and when it's time to come down, it's snip, snip, snip. It's all down in 3 minutes, and I've, you know, wasted a total of 40 cents worth of zip ties. So there are lots of different ways that you can do it, and I'm sure you're clever enough to come up with something that'll work. And if you want to grow citrus, and I certainly applaud you for doing that, I think you will be well advised to, you know, be able to create some sort of structure like that. And you may even, if it gets as cold as it did this past couple of weeks, you're going to have to stick a little milk house heater or something in there. But it's very durable.
All right, I appreciate it, Bob. Now I just got to try to get it by the wife, but that's a second.
take her the most delicious citrus drink you can possibly think of, and, you know, say, now, honey, we could be growing this for ourselves. And anyway, good luck with that one, and you call me anytime you need suggestions, Tom. I appreciate the call.
I appreciate it, Bob. Have a good morning.
Certainly. You too. Thank you. Juanita and Nancy, hang on just a second. Need to get a break out of the way here. I get to talk about azole mite. And I tell you what, walking through the nursery looking around after we got back in town, noticed a little bit of yellowing in some of the citrus, which is, you know, kind of normal this time of year. But I promise you, we'll be putting azole mite on every tree out there. It's the most amazing product I've ever found for greening things up with natural nutrients. Azomite is just an incredible blend of micronutrients that works so well, keeps your plants healthier. But the thing you will notice most is plants that have a tendency to yellow. Boy, it can sure take care of that in a hurry. And many times, in fact, most plants, it's not a matter of drop the yellow leaves and put on new green ones. That's what's happening when you're using green sand and things like that. Azomite seems to be able to take a lot of leaves that are yellow due to micronutrient deficiencies, and those leaves actually green back up again. We see that all the time on periwinkles, just on a lot of different plants. It's not an expensive product. It's great not just for the yellowing, but just to give you the best flavor in your vegetables, give you the best growth. And once again, so easy to put out. It will never burn. It's a natural rock ore, and you can get it in more granular form, or you can get it in a form that's fine enough that can actually be suspended in water and sprayed. It's called azomite, A-Z-O-M-I-T-E. Contains almost 100 different beneficial micronutrients and compounds. You'll find it in small bags or large at good garden centers and nurseries everywhere. Remember that name, azomite. All right, let's get back to gardening, and let's get straight back to those phone lines. Juanita and Nancy are my next two callers. Juanita is up first. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you this morning?
I am great. Hey, I just have two questions. I live right here in Atkins. It's only sand, and I'm retired, so I want to start me a vegetable garden.
Very
and
good.
I want to start a raised vegetable garden, so I just want to know what is like my first and second layer that I need to add to this all sand and to have a raised garden.
Well, you want to add something that's high in organic material, And you can either, you know, go to just a good material supply yard and get a good, what they call garden soil. Now I would specify that you want soil that does not have any biosolids in it. There are some people out there mixing some things into the soils that I wouldn't want, especially in the vegetable garden. But, just a good garden soil mix from any number of different people will work. If you want to work with all that sand you have, and I'd trade you some sand for some rock anytime where I live. I can't dig down. I have to go up. But you can get just a good compost, and you can mix with the sand you already have. And compost plus sand makes a pretty good gardening medium. So that's your other option. Now, the beauty of it is, since you're not sitting on a layer of rock, you don't have to make a 2 foot high, you know, bed to grow something and grow something very well. I think if you build up even 12 to 18 inches, you'll have enough soil that, by putting the good soil on top, you're going to help your soil to hold the nutrients, to hold the water, the things the plants need to grow well, and they'll just, you know, continue to grow it on down into the sand, which will help support the plant. But what needs to the most important thing you need is either just a bunch of good compost or else just a good garden soil that is high in compost.
Okay, got it. So high in compost. Okay, and when do I need to start preparing this bed for my summer garden?
About 6 months ago. But since we can't time travel backwards, just as soon as you can do it, because if your bed was ready, you could go out and plant spinach today. You could plant snow peas today. You could plant another crop of broccoli and cauliflower. They're, you know, they're things we plant almost every day of the year and things we harvest almost every day of the year. Great time to be planting onions. Where you are, we're getting real close to time to plant potatoes. You get that garden bed ready, and I'll find you plenty of things to plant it the day you get it done.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you so much. I did go to the plant nursery and got the list of when to start planting things. It's just a good list to go by.
I have not looked at Fennec's. I need to get with Mike or Mark. I may see him later this week, and you know, I guess probably every nursery has their own. Fennec has been around for, you know, 90 years, so I'm sure their list is a good list, but I'm not going to endorse it 100% since I've never really sat down and read theirs. In fact, if I get a long break, I might go online. I'm sure it's on their website at fennecnursery.com, but I'm sure you can trust it. If you're ever in our part of town, we'll happily give you a copy of the one that we've made out.
I do come to your nursery all the time, so
you just say, "Hey, I want that vegetable planting guide," and our list tells you what to plant in the spring, what to plant in the fall, what to plant from plants, what to plant from seed, how to space them out. Yeah, we'd love to give you a copy of that one. I'm surprised nobody's offered it yet.
And thank you so much. I appreciate that. I listen to you every week. You really do a great service for the community.
Well, you know what? My pleasure, and I love talking with wonderful people like yourself. So you get out and have a wonderful weekend, and I'll move on and talk to someone else that I'm sure is a great person, and that would be Nancy. Good morning, Nancy.
Yeah, good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Last spring, I planted, I guess maybe in April or May, I planted two rose bushes, one the Grandma Yella and the other one the Rio Samba.
Uh-huh.
And this, when we had this cold weather, I totally forgot about them. The first night it went down to 20 and it was drizzly and all the leaves were, you know, covered with ice and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, you know, I called your nursery and they said, well, to cover it. And so the next night when it got down to the, you know, the 10s and 9s and 11s, I did cover both of them. Do you think they're going to be okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. My mother grew roses in East Tennessee where it got to 10 below zero. and you know, most of the time they came through fine. You may have some foliar damage. The leaves may not be real pretty on them, but and obviously, you know, they were watered beforehand. Your roses are fine. We're getting close. About 2 weeks from now, it'll be time to do any pruning on them that needs to be done on bush roses, which is what you have. So I stop worrying. I can find you plenty of other things to worry about. I'm worried about our Hong Kong orchid tree. I'm worried about flax lilies. And I've got some things I'm a little concerned about, but rose bushes are not one of them.
Yeah, because my other antique rose and long-standing roses, Martha's, whatever it is. Anyway, they do
Martha
fine.
Gonzalez.
I don't
prefer them
at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Your newly planted ones, you know, obviously they don't have the root system of the ones that have been in the ground a long time, but roses are tough, hardy plants, and I would be very surprised if they didn't come out strong this spring.
Okay. All right. Well, I won't worry anymore.
Do, if you haven't fertilized in the past couple of months, do give them a little shot of fertilizer. Stop worrying.
Okay, I'm going to go out and fertilize today.
That'll be perfect.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
You're certainly welcome. Thank you. I need to get a break in here. James and Billy will be my next two callers, but it looks like I get to talk to you about, talk to you about the good folks over at Fanix, and this is the day that they are having their big seminar, their fruit tree seminar. It starts, I believe, at 9 o'clock, and it's absolutely free of charge. The good folks from the Extension Service are going to be putting it on, and it's always a good event. Now, it is an outside event, so dress warmly, but it's, like I say, it's going to go on today. And they're actually, let's see, yeah, at 9 o'clock is when it starts. They're going to do also a fruit tree basics seminar with Larry Stein is the fellow who's going to be doing it. And you're going to learn, oh, gosh, about overall maintenance. You're going to learn about pruning. You're going to learn everything you need to know about growing those. He'll also talk about multi-grafted fruit trees. And Fanix, of course, has lots and lots of different fruit trees out there right now, including the so-called fruit salad tree that has peach, plum, apricot, nectarine, all on one tree. I could go on and on. Fanix also wants you to know they have a good variety of seed potatoes in. They've got all your winter vegetables. You've got all your cool weather flowers. They're celebrating their 85th anniversary by hosting various events throughout the year. So go to their website at Fanix, F-A-N-I-C-K, FanixNursery.com, and you'll see all the different things coming up. They've been there since 1939, same place over on Home Green Road, open 7 days a week, closed only on major holidays. And like I say, you can always check out their website at FanixNursery.com. Good people, go see them.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster.
News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening and back to the phone lines. James is first. Good morning, James.
Morning, Bob. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. How about yourself on this little bit more typical January morning? I never say normal for obvious reasons when I talk about Texas weather, but this is kind of what January should be like, not the kind of stuff we had a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, sir. I'm slopping through the mud. We probably got 5-6 inches of rain out here.
Man, it's nice. Don't complain. I'll put up with a little mud compared to dust. And most folks got a pretty good rain. Not all of us got as much as you did out in the Marion area, but you'll get beyond the mud, and your plants are just sitting out there smiling at you.
Yeah, the onions got hammered, and they're starting to come out of it. So I think they're going to make it, but I'm not real sure.
I imagine they will. You can always plant a few more just to be on the safe side. Do you grow potatoes, or potatoes something that you grow?
No, I can't have potatoes on this farm because I'm pretty much totally tomatoes.
Well, I didn't think you did, but I was gonna ask you if you had any suggestions there, but No, I think most of the onions are going to come out of it okay, especially ones that have been in the ground for a few weeks to get some roots down. But if you want to be on the safe side, you got lots of room. Go ahead and plant another row or two just to be sure you'll have plenty.
It's a good idea. Malcolm used to tell us to plant potatoes in the full moon in February.
Right.
Was his advice. And now that we've got the battery drills and the augers, you know, grandma can plant potatoes, man. All you got to do is drill a hole and drop your seed potato in, and you're done.
You're right about that, but I'll tell you one thing, James, and that is I don't like an auger because if you hit a root or if you hit a rock, that can jerk your drill so hard it'll snap your wrist a little uncomfortably. But they make something called a max bit, and it works just like an auger, but it's never gonna jar you if it runs into something. And if you haven't found one of those, you ought to take a look at it. They're heavy steel. You give them a little care, they'll probably last 50 years for you. But I don't like those augers because I've used them a time or two, and you hit something too hard, it can sure jerk the heck out of you. But check out the max bit. It's a real neat little device.
Yeah, we put the T handle on the battery drill, and then we've got a 6-inch auger, and
yep.
That's what we use for transplanting. You name peppers. Tomatoes.
Yeah. Well, I timed myself one time, and it took me like 5 minutes to drill 60 holes planting potatoes. And the nice thing about that is that you don't have to, it's not a two-handed deal. I could, you know, walk along, I could drill with one hand, drop the dusted potato section in there. And anyway, you can sure move along. You can sure plant a lot of potatoes in a hurry.
I got a question about the nematodes. I think we're probably getting ready with the soil temperature to put out the spring nematodes, aren't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. The nematodes come in like 5, 10, 50 million packs, and I was wondering, can I order like a 10 million pack and then just cut it in half and use that in the compost tea and then keep the rest for maybe a week later?
You can, but you'll have to look carefully at that little sponge or whatever you're getting, what it comes on, because they're not uniformly distributed. You can't just, you know, cut that sponge in half. You're going to have to look at it, and it looked like a, you'll see where it looks like it's got a big dab of goo along there, and you want to cut your sponge to where you have about half of that on each side. So yes, what you're talking about is very doable. And we're finding they keep longer. They used to say you couldn't keep them in the refrigerator for more than 2 weeks. Now they're saying it's maybe even up to a couple of months. But just when you unfold that little sponge, look at it and, you know, make your cut not based on exact size, but where you're cutting through a half or a third or whatever you're planning to cut into it, where you actually can see that you've got plenty of material on either side of your cut. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. That's my question, and that's a good answer. And one other thing I wanted to call about this morning is I read the Texas Bug Book probably every day. And my two favorite people wrote it.
Yep.
Well, they recommend, excuse me, that the fruit trees and the pecan trees get fertilized about the first 2 weeks in February. And I just wanted to remind everybody that they need to go get their fertilizer and get ready to go, because it's time to fertilize the pecans and the fruit trees.
Well, it absolutely is. And the thing, and of course, Malcolm and Howard, Malcolm knew this, Howard knows this, is that you, with the modern organic fertilizers where that nutrient's in the cation form, it doesn't leach away. It doesn't go away. So if you're a little too early putting it out, it's not like you've lost your fertilizer. It's going to be sitting there in the soil waiting until the plants are ready to make use of it. So you're exactly right. It's time to get your fertilizer on, not just for your fruit trees, but for everything in your orchard and, for that matter, everything in your yard.
Yeah, man. We go to Hondo and buy growing green by the ton.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can get it. You can get it in those big totes if you got a way to move it and store it, and it gets a lot cheaper. And we don't go get it because we get 26 tons at a time, and I don't have a trailer that big. But it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah, you can pick up a sack and really get with the program, I tell you what. And thanks for your advice on the nematodes.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, James. You get out and have a good day, and keep those rains around. We're good set for a week or two, but, man, if it would just continue to give us a good thorough rain like it has this week, if it do that, you know, every 3 or 4 weeks through the spring, it'd sure make for a good year. So you get out and stay safe, and we'll talk again. And, Jimmy, let's move on and talk to Billy. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning. Good morning, Bob. How you doing this morning?
Off to a good start. It's not having to wear a heavy jacket or long john, so this weather agrees with me.
It is. Bob, we've got a zoysia yard and everything, and it's got some kind of weed in it. I have no idea. But it looks like it's gone dormant. Can
uh-huh.
I get the orange oil out and spray those weeds? Or
oh, absolutely.
Just wasting my time.
Absolutely. Remember, the weeds, well, whatever you're spraying on needs to be green, but Bermuda and Zoysia, it's all browned out with the cold that we've had. So, yeah, mix up your vinegar and orange oil. It's actually the vinegar that does the weed killing, but a gallon of vinegar, 2 ounces of orange oil, and just a little dish soap. What you're killing, you probably don't need to add anything else. I'll sometimes put a tablespoon of molasses or two in there. I think it makes it a little better on the turfer weeds. But what you got coming up right now is going to be clover and henbit and wintergrass. And just your old basic vinegar and orange oil will kill it, and it won't harm your zoysia in any way.
Okay, should I use the real strong vinegar?
It will work better that way, but this time of year, the weeds tend to be tender enough that, you know, that it's not mandatory. If you want to save a little money, don't use just plain vinegar, but get at least the pickling vinegar. You want to go to at least 9%. You can get that, and it's, in fact, if you're using the 20%, you could probably dilute it a little bit if you've got a big area to do, but, it sure is time to get out there and get it done.
Okay, Adams probably carries the 20%, don't they?
Oh yeah, I'm sure they do.
Okay. Okay.
And if you're qualified to buy from them, you can even get it in a 2.5 gallon jug that's a little cheaper.
Oh, now that's good to know. That's good to know.
Yes, sir.
And I guess we can go ahead and plant potatoes now.
If you're San Antonio or south, you can. Mid-San Antonio north, I'm going to wait a couple of weeks. And up in the hill country, I think you're much better to wait until the second, third week of February. San Antonio, you just, you're probably safe, but the weather has shown us that it is totally unpredictable this year. So, I'd wait probably another 10 days, 2 weeks here in San Antonio. But, again, plant them. If they freeze back, they'll come back out again at least once or twice.
Okay. Well, we live over here around Garden Ridge, kind of in the hill country, so
yeah.
Maybe I'll just wait.
Yeah, I'd hold off a week or two, and I think you'd be totally safe then. And soil's so wet right now, thank goodness, it might be a little harder to plant today anyway, so I'll give you a weekend off.
Amen to that. Thank you. And if you want them, when you cut them, you want at least 2 eyes?
Yeah, you'd like 2 eyes per section, and either roll them in wood ashes or in rock phosphate, powdered rock phosphate.
There you go. I love that rock phosphate. Well, that's wonderful for the tomatoes.
It does. It's just you can't mix it with the soil or it loses all its effect. But when you put it in as a layer or where you're using it just to cauterize the cut surface like you are on your potato, it's just magical. In fact, old Malcolm Beck did a weighing test, and he came out with more than twice as many pounds of tomatoes where he used it. So it's good stuff.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That is. All righty. Well, Bob, I'll let you go. Catch somebody.
I got to go to news. We'll talk to you soon. This is KTSA Radio in San Antonio, Texas.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, back to gardening on a nice, well, kind of overcast, but at least a much nicer temperature out there than what we have had for a January morning. And let's just get right on back to the phone lines. Kay and Tom are my next two callers, and I do have a couple of open lines. If you want to grab one of them, you know the number, 210-599-5555. Right now, we say good morning, Kay.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I have a little bit of partial information to contribute. Several weeks ago, I think it was one of your neighbors called in and wanted to know how to sanitize barnwood.
Right.
And I recently built a house and tore down an old barn and used some of the barnwood. And I looked for the receipt. I couldn't find the name of the place. But it's a little place real near Bastrop. So if you ask a custom builder in that area, they would probably find it. But they, my handyman took the boards over there. They, I don't know, they heated them. They put them in a kiln. They cooked them or did something. But they got rid of any mold, any insect, anything undesirable. And I use those boards in my ceiling and my entryway. In my ceiling, in my sunroom, and also my mantle and my fireplace. So it worked real well.
Oh, that's really good to know. If you come across the, you know, the name of this place, please let me know. Gosh, I was over near Bastrop just a couple of weeks ago in a place I'd never heard of, Lexington, Texas. I'll make
it a little bitty place, maybe not Bastrop, but real close to it. A little bitty place. I looked for the receipt. I couldn't find it. I'll ask my handyman if he can remember.
Yeah, ask him if he can remember, and I'll ask a couple of the builders I know. But that's excellent information to have, and I certainly appreciate you sharing it, Kay. At barnwood, I love barnwood. We've built a lot of structures with barnwood, but if somebody is offering that kiln drying service, boy, that'd take care of any insect issues, would take care of, like you say, any of the wood rots or things like that. So that's extremely good to know. You have my thanks and the thanks of a lot of other people listening this morning as well.
Well, it's really neat when you can use your own barn wood from your own barn.
Absolutely.
It makes your house special.
It certainly does. And once again, go ahead.
I'm through. I'm just going to say thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I thank you for the call, and we'll move on and talk to Tom next. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I have a quick question here. We have a neighbor that has, I guess it's bamboo that's gotten out of control, and it's breached into the yard, our yard.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, and it, unfortunately, it's around a very large oak tree, and we're trying to figure out how to get it out without damaging the oak tree and to keep it out. How can we block it around the yard? We were thinking about an atomic bomb or something, but
that'd be hard on the oak tree.
But I think that we were actually considering using a power washer to try to dig the roots up and get them back, but that's, I don't know if that even that will work well.
The thing of it is, I don't think you need to be quite, you know, worry quite that much about digging that deep or exposing that much. The nice thing about bamboo, if there is anything nice about the spreading bamboo, I love the clumping bamboo, but that spreading kind can just be the devil. But it makes a runner that stays no more than about an inch below the surface of the ground, and it does not come back from the roots. It only comes back from portions of that runner. So what I have done, and you don't have to dig very deeply, and just use a grubbing hoe. Get in there and just kind of move along. You'll be able to, you'll pull up on that runner, and then you can just move along, just kind of chop, cutting it off just horizontally, just very below the surface of the soil, and it will not come back. So it takes a little effort and a little bit of time, but that's really all you need to do to get rid of it. Now, as far as keeping it out, you're going to have to put like some sort of barrier. You could dig a little trench, maybe 10 or 12 inches deep, and you could use metal. You could use almost anything. Some people, will dig a trench and put like two or three layers of polyethylene or something like that in there and then fill back in against it. But bamboo does not grow deeply underground. That runner is always going to be no more than an inch or two below the surface of the ground. So any kind of barrier you can create that goes that far down on the ground is all you need to worry about.
Well, thank you very much. That's kind of what we were hoping to find out.
Well, you're certainly welcome, and I do appreciate the call this morning. Thank you, sir.
All right. You have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
You too. Goodbye, Tom. Next in line is Alonzo. Good morning, Alonzo.
Good morning, Bob. I have a question for you. I have two big bushes or trees of Esperanza.
Yes, uh-huh.
And they're about maybe 10 feet tall. Was the trees, I guess, killed them, or I guess they died back to the ground?
Well, it froze them. It's up to you. The top certainly did freeze, and it almost certainly will come out from the base. The thing that it's very hard to tell is how far down it froze them. It might have frozen them all the way to the ground, or it might have frozen them down to 12 inches above the ground, or, even sometimes a little bit higher than that. And if you want to be sure you're not cutting back more than you need to, you almost have to wait for them to start sprouting out in the spring. Because if you've got one that's 10 feet tall, but the top, it sprouts out 2 feet above the ground, then you're going to know that everything above that point is frozen, and that's how far you'll cut it back. If it were mine, just for appearance's sake, I'd probably cut them down to, and how tall was this plant before the freeze hit?
Well, right now they're about maybe 5 feet.
Okay.
5 to 6 feet. They were 10 feet before the freeze.
Yeah, I'd cut them down to probably 3 feet tall, because I'm pretty sure they'll be frozen at least that far back, and then wait for them to come out. And like I say, they may come back right at ground level. They may come out 6 or 8 inches up. But, we were down, getting close to 10 degrees across a lot of this area, and that froze them way back. But they're a tough plant. They almost certainly will come back. But I'd cut them down far enough that they don't look bad, and just leave them until you see that new growth start out.
Okay. And what about the canna lilies? Will they'll be fine? Do I need to cut those?
They'll be fine. Yeah, they'll be fine. You might as well go ahead and cut those down to ground level, because they're nothing but mush. And banana palms, calla lilies, ornamental gingers, things like that, they pretty much froze all the way to the ground. So at your convenience, go ahead and cut them back. Now, a lot of those things, especially the banana palms, that sap stains worse than anything I have ever seen. So when you get ready to go out and do this, be sure you're not wearing something that you really like, because you'll never get that stain out of it. I can tell you from having learned that the hard way.
Okay. Okay, and a few more things, Bob. I have a banana tree, orange tree, lemon tree.
Uh-huh.
And we covered them up, with a box, covered them and then kind of put a blanket over it and put the hay, stuffed hay at the bottom or straws.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't think it hurt, the freeze hurt or froze them. But
right.
Is there anything that I can do to, like, make them a little healthier?
Well, you know, good fertilizer, something like the liquid Has to Grow would be very good. Has to Grow plant fertilizer. There's a product out there called Super Thrive. Comes in kind of a hokey looking package. It's a brown bottle with a yellow label on it, and you read it, it sounds like snake oil, but it's one of the most amazing things I've ever found. You don't want to be keeping the soil too soggy wet, and chances are you got a good rain out of this, so don't do anything until that soil's down, until it's dried out, you know, about a knuckle deep, about an inch deep. But when it gets to the point that you need to water, we're certainly mixing a little fertilizer in, a little Super Thrive in as we water, and it'll help things bounce back. And, you know, we're getting real close to the time things will start putting on their spring growth, but that'll just make sure that they've got all the nutrients they need. One other thing you might do that doesn't involve any mixing or measuring, I truly love this stuff called Azomite. And you get it. I would get the so sort of granular form, and just sprinkle, you know, a cup or two around the base of just about everything out there. That will really help them come back out in good shape. It's not a fertilizer, but it has got all the iron and zinc and manganese and boron and all those things that the plants only need a little bit of. And it's truly amazing at keeping things green.
Okay. Hey, well, sounds good, Bob. Thank you very much.
That's my pleasure. I thank you, sir. And you get out and enjoy this beautiful January day. I appreciate the call. Thank you. I better take a break here. Looks like I get to talk to you about Southwest Metal Roofing Systems. Everybody always says, why do you talk about a roofing company on a plant show? Well, I say it's peace of mind. How much time do you spend worrying about your roof, especially if you have an old shingle roof? Roofers are going to tell you, and they're right, the freezing weather may hurt your roof. Hot weather will hurt your roof. Of course, if we get that baking sun, that's going to hurt it. And then, of course, we always worry about hail and things. Well, you worry about that if you have an old shingle roof or a not-so-good metal roof. But if you have a roof like I have, a roof from Southwest Metal Roofing Systems, you just stop worrying about the weather. They put on a lifetime quality roof. They give you the best warranty in the industry. This roof is so energy efficient, it'll save you money on your utility bills every month. Most insurance companies will give you a discount on your homeowner's insurance. They know how good a Southwest Metal Roofing Systems roof is, and they know they're not going to be paying claims for weather damage. Our roof here at the nursery stood up to baseball size hail with barely a dimple. I've had the roof on my home up in the hill country for, I guess 20 years now. Never called them with one single problem. The roofs are attractive. If you don't like the roof look of standing seam metal, they have various colors. They even have roofs that look like something different, like slate or ceramic tile or shake shingles, but they're actually this lifetime quality metal. And Southwest Metal Roofing Systems does new construction as well. If you're building a new home, tell your builder you want the Southwest Metal Roofing Systems to put the roof on. That's what we did with our new groundwater district office up in Bernie. That way we'll never have to worry about that roof for the life of the building. Southwest Metal Roofing Systems, simply the best in the business. If you'd like to learn more, they'd love to talk to you. 210-822-6868 is 210-822-6868 for Southwest Metal Roofing Systems.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air.
News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening on a nice January morning out there. Let's just go straight back to the phone lines. And by the way, I have a couple of open lines, so grab one of them if you like. 210-599-5555. Next two callers are Bob and Janet, man with a very good name. Good morning, Bob.
Hi, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning.
Great. Recent transplant from southeast Wisconsin. Gardening knowledge, we're starting from scratch here in Hill Country. Going to install a 20-foot by 20-foot vegetable garden.
Very good.
Going to do it raised, just because of the soil out there. So we're going to build the perimeter out of a natural stone.
Uh-huh.
Walk me through what I do on the inside. Do I put down some gravel? Do I worry about drainage? What type of soil do I need? Where do I get that soil?
Excuse me. You really don't need to do anything on the inside. Does this area have a lot of weeds in it? Is it basically bare soil? What does this future garden site look like right now?
Mostly bare. Much of the property has this real coarse grass that grows like in little bunches, but it's mostly the broken rock and a little bit of soil here and there. Not much weed growth at all.
What I would do is, and I'm not a fan of plastic or weed block fabrics or anything like that. If you feel like that any of this grass is likely to regrow, you can put just a layer of several layers of newspaper or cardboard or something like that that's going to decompose fairly quickly, and then put your soil on top of that. The only really noxious grass that tends to come back is Bermuda, and it can be hard to get rid of. Johnson grass, maybe a little bit, but how much are you going to build up? 12, 18 inches? How tall is this rock wall around it going to be?
Well, let's start with that. Probably the deepest plant we might consider will be carrots. So probably 18 inches in a portion of it, but I'm guessing 12-inch depth, and that's part of the question here, is probably adequate for most vegetable gardening.
Oh, absolutely. The deeper the soil you have, of course, it would be better for perennial vegetables like asparagus, which, you probably grew asparagus in Wisconsin. It's very cold hardy, but comes back year after year. You can grow artichokes here if you're an artichoke fan, and they typically last 3 or 4 years. Some people want to mix in a few herbs like rosemary or thyme or mint. Any of these perennial things, getting the soil a little deeper is going to make them more cold hardy and easier to keep them watered and maintained. For annual vegetables, though, whether it's carrots or turnips or tomatoes and peppers and things like that, 12 inches is certainly going to be adequate. The main thing that you're going to have to undo, the way you did it in Wisconsin, and what you're going to do here is simply your timing. Up there, I'm sure you grow carrots in the summer. We grow carrots in the winter. And so pick up, I know Fanix offers a good garden guide at no charge. We have one here at our nursery that we're happy to give away that tells you our recommended planting dates, both spring and fall, on all the different crops. You'll learn which ones are better set out from plants, like tomatoes and peppers in the summer, broccoli, cauliflower, things like that in the winter, and which ones you can plant from seed. I mean, if your bed was ready right now, you could plant a world of different cool weather things like your carrots and radishes and turnips. You can plant snow peas, and then in the summer months you plant some things from seed like, you know, squash and beans and all, and plant other things like tomatoes and peppers and eggplant from plants. So anyway, if you'd like a copy of some of those, that'll sort of help you get a good start. If you want to buy a book, there are two good books by the same two authors, Howard Garrett, who's a gentleman I'll be talking to in about 30 minutes here, and Malcolm Beck, who was the founder of Gardenville. Malcolm passed away 2-3 years ago, but they have written two very useful books. One of them is called The Texas Bug Book, which will show you virtually every pest you can imagine, along with the good guys that you want to protect. And then they have one they call the Vegetable Gardening in South Texas, I think. And those are both kind of, those would be the Bibles that I would keep on my shelf, if you want more in-depth information on gardening in this area, because both of them are written very specifically, you know, for Texas. But, back to your original question, unless you have Bermuda grass, unless you have, you know, a whole lot of the bunch grass, and I just get in with a grubbing hoe and chop out any big bunches of it, but you don't really need to put down anything. The soil's going to drain well naturally. Putting a rock, and are you going to stack the rock, or is it going to be, you going to lay it with mortar, or are you going to just dry stack it?
Well, I think we'll dry stack it just for that reason, to get excess moisture out, right? That's probably best for the plants. Right, so that would be the way to go there, not to create a bathtub.
That's exactly what I would recommend. I will tell you that I would suggest outside your rock border, you know, on this garden, I would put like a 3 foot wide strip of either the so-called weed block or black plastic just to keep things from growing in from the outside. Now, I'm fortunate that I have some fairly deep soil where, you know, there's been a garden on my place for 100 years. But I keep about a 3 foot just sheet of plastic on the ground all the way around, a little mulch on it to hold it down, because I've got Bermuda further out in that field that will happily try to grow underneath it. And once it gets inside, it's really hard to get rid of. So I don't recommend putting down anything like that inside, but I would sure keep at least about a 3 foot barrier around the outside, put some mulch over it, make it a nice clean walking surface. But inside your garden proper, just a good garden soil, I would specify, and there are lots of companies, probably the biggest in the area is called Site, S-I-T-E, Site One, used to be Stone and Soil Depot, but they make a good garden soil. Just specify that you want a non-biosolids garden soil. Fill it and fill it about 6 inches higher than the walls of the garden are, because it's going to sink. The first year, it is probably going to sink 6 inches down. Maybe 4 inches might be enough to build up. But otherwise, you're going to be going back in a year from now and adding more soil. And even if it's mounded up a bit, that's not going to stop you from doing all the gardening you want to do. And, it's going to be work to get it started. But unlike Wisconsin, and I made my first trip to Wisconsin earlier this past year, but, we garden 365 days a year. There should be something you can pick from the garden every day of the year. There are things that you can plant every single day of the year. So I think you may not enjoy the heat, but you're sure going to enjoy the long gardening season in our part of the world.
Great. Well, thanks for the info this morning. Enjoy the weekend.
Well, you do the same, and don't hesitate to call anytime. And I don't know how you discovered us, but I appreciate it. We do this from 5:30 till 9 Saturday mornings. Tomorrow morning, I talk gardening from 8 until 11, and then Dr. Dan Kirby, who's the best veterinarian I've ever known, comes in, and we talk pet health for an hour after that. So anyway, appreciate you joining us, and look forward to visiting anytime we can help.
Very good, sir. Enjoy the day.
Thank you, sir, and you do the same. Janet, hang on just a second. Need to get a quick break in here, and you will be up next. I get to talk for a moment about Sam Sitterly and Green Grow Organics, and maybe you're new to the area. Maybe gardening with the South Texas landscape is something new to you. If you'd like to have someone who can be your consultant, somebody that can stand at your elbow and tell you what's going right, what's going wrong in your yard, whether it's a new yard to you or whether you've been doing this for 40 years, well, Sam Sitterly has been doing this for a long time to help people. And that's his principal business, is as a consultant. He has started a new service, though, that I highly, highly recommend to you. And kind of in response to all these guys that use the poison and all the things we don't approve of, that want to sign you up for some contract where you're tied in forever and they come around and spray this stuff periodically. Well, Sam has his own program, but there's no obligation. There's no contract. And he comes around on a monthly basis and takes care of whatever your landscape needs. Fertilizing, application of beneficial nematodes, adding micronutrients, whatever it takes. Sam will do this on a quarterly basis for you. And then if you need him at other points, you just call him and set that up. But his quarterly service is, you know, no obligation. And like I say, no long-term contract, very reasonably priced. And everything Sam does is organic. So while he's, you know, certainly available there to you for individual consultation, if that's all you need, that's has been his business for almost 40 years. But this new quarterly program to provide the fertilizer, the micronutrients, the beneficial nematode application, I think it's just a great service, because you know everything's going to be organic, and you know Sam has the experience to know what needs to be done and what doesn't. Great guy, great company, Green Grow Organics. If you want to give him a call, 599-5565, 599-5565, area code 210. He is Sam Sitterly. His company is Green Grow Organics.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster.
News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening, and let's just get right straight back to the phone lines. It's going to be Janet and Janie and Brad. Janet's first in line. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning. I apologize if this is a duplicate question. I got on the tail end of one of your conversations.
Everything we've said needs to be repeated periodically, so go right ahead.
And I'm sorry. I had a lot of things that froze in my backyard. Can I cut them back now, or should I wait? And some of the plants that I have are airplane, purple fountain grass, plumerias, and cannons.
Ah, gosh, the plumerias may or may not come back.
Okay.
Plumeria really needs to come inside in the winter. You might as well cut them back, but I'd be looking around for, you know, probably some new plumeria. The cannas, just swap the top off of them. They'll be back with no problem at all, but that foliage is, you know, frozen. It's a mess, and it's just going to get messier. So I would cut it back as soon as convenient. The airplane plant, was it planted in the ground or was it in a pot or hanging basket?
In the ground, and it just seems to be like maybe tips and surrounding. The centers actually look pretty good.
And this is the one that is slightly thicker leaved. It's the one that kind of has a reverse variegation with not a real thin leaf, but with a little bit stouter leaf.
Yes, it's a thin leaf. The inner leaf is white, and the outer leaf is green.
Okay. It's going to be wait and see. That one usually comes back out. I would give it a bit of a haircut, just as much as it takes to make it look nice.
Okay.
But it's, it's something that can be used as a ground cover. There are two forms. There is one variegated one that is not at all cold hardy. The other one, which is probably what you have, it's a little narrower leaf and it's a little waxier to the touch, but it normally comes back without any problem.
Okay.
Purple fountain grass, cut it back to, 2 inches tall and keep your fingers crossed. Most winters it freezes down and comes back out. When it gets to 12 degrees, sometimes it dies. So I go ahead and cut it back. If it hasn't resprouted by probably early April, then plan on replacing it because it's, 9 years out of 10, it just comes right back. But
sure.
This was a very cold winter for the third year in a row, and it's just not dependably cold hardy, kind of like, lemongrass is.
Right.
If you have it again and it's going to get this cold, basically just bury it in compost. I mean, put compost over it 6 inches deep or some other good mulch. That way it'll almost always come back out from ground level. But unless it was heavily mulched, it's just going to be wait and see. But I can promise you that those brown leaves are not going to turn green. So go ahead and cut it back to a couple of inches tall.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You have a good day.
You do the same, and nobody asked that particular question, so no guilt there at all. You ask a nice, unique, very timely question, so you get out and have a good weekend, Janet.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye. All right, next in line is Janie. Hey, what's going on this morning, Janie?
Good morning, Bob.
It's good morning.
Me.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I've got a tropical bird of paradise. And since we got all this frost, it all turned like dead, But what I want to know, should I cut them right now or should I wait until they turn brown?
It makes no difference at all. Is yours the one that's orange and purple and, that color, or is yours the white tropical bird of paradise?
Mine is the purple and orange.
Okay. It's going to have frozen way back. It they're hard when it gets down into the teens. So it's up to you. If it comes back, it probably will be from the base, and it's just going to kind of melt. So if it is kind of limp, I would go ahead and cut it back just because it'll look nicer. The plant doesn't really care. But it's almost certainly frozen to at least some degree. So if it were mine, I'd probably cut it back to about 6 inches tall.
Okay. The thing about it, when you cut it and it and it comes out, because it has been coming out for me.
Yeah.
When it comes out, it doesn't come out from the part that I cut off. I've noticed that.
No, it's different from a, you know, from a woody shrub like an Esperanza or something like that. Esperanza and the other things that you're used to growing, they have little hidden buds. Many of them you can't even see, and they have sort of a predetermined spot up and down the stem where they're capable of branching out and growing again. Your tropical bird of paradise, Strelitzia, doesn't have that. It only can sprout and grow from the base. So it, you know, even if it hadn't frozen, it wouldn't make any difference if you cut it off 2 feet or 18 inches or 12 inches. All the growth is going to come out either from right of the center where you cut it or down from the base, because it just has a totally different structure than a woody shrub does. It doesn't have any buds up and down. It's always going to grow from the base. Sometimes it'll grow out right in the center of where you cut it. Sometimes it'll make new growths that come out around the edges.
I see, because at one time, I don't know who told me to do that, to get a pitchfork and pull them out. But when I was doing that, I could see it was green, you know, on the bottom. Looked like an onion when you peel it, you know, like that.
Right, right.
I said, No,
I would not pull that out. I'd just cut it back and, you know, when it dries, peel away those brown leaves, and hopefully you'll have some green that comes out from the center. If it's come out the past couple of years for you, it will probably come out this spring for you. But it's not going to come out from up high. So go ahead and cut it back enough to at least make it look nice.
Do they have a special tool to cut into it? You know, like it's round, and I'm cutting, I'm trying to get as low as I can with it. And sometimes I just can't do it. And I said, there's got to be something that you can put right around that root, you know, and just cut it, you know.
Well, they're typically called lopping shears. They're kind of like the pruning shears that you're used to, but they have handles that, you know, maybe 18 to 24 inches long. And some of them, the jaws open much wider. And they certainly do make it easier. Now, the bird of paradise, the tropical bird of paradise, doesn't have thorns or anything like that that are going to hurt you. But like you say, you can wear your hand out trying to get your hand pruners all the way around it. So go to a good nursery and tell them you want to look at what are called lopping, L-O-P-P-I-N-G, lopping shears, and they'll show you what will make the job a lot easier.
Do you have that at your shop?
We normally do. Once again, I've been at a gift market for almost 2 weeks, so I haven't looked at our wall of tools yet, but that's something we certainly normally keep in stock. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'll call and talk to the lady, and she can tell me. Okay, another thing is I have a what kind of orange? It's an orange tree.
A satsuma of some sort?
I can't think of the name of it. Anyway, I cover the roots, like you said, last year, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I cover all around, so I figured that it's alive, I hope. I haven't taken it apart.
Oh, it should be. It should be. If it's probably one of the satsumas, one of the tangerine types, mihoers.
It's a tangerine tree.
Yeah.
And it's in a pot, but I cover the upper part. Like
yep.
you said last year that you thought about it, you know, and so I did that this year. I covered it up real good.
I think you'll be fine, and just watch anything that comes out below the graft point. You, of course, will want to prune off, but it should come out up above that point without any problem for you.
Okay, then you answer my question, and I'll call the shop earlier and ask her if you have a tool so that I can buy it.
Well, and all the staff's out unloading. We got a huge truck from California this morning. I'm sitting here watching cart after cart of pretty plants going by, but we always are here to help you anytime we can, Janie. You get out and
she'll get any roses, the ones that smell real pretty.
We don't have a lot of, I don't think any of the nurseries have a lot of their spring roses. We have a few in, but around Valentine's Day is when we start getting lots of roses, and most of your nurseries will too. But we certainly do get, there's one called Joe's Rose. It's a red rose, and I swear you can smell that thing 20 feet away. That's one of my favorites, and I know we'll have some of those in pretty soon.
Okay, then, on Valentine's Day, right?
Right. You got it.
I got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Janie. It's good to talk to you. Thank you. Jimmy, I don't have a live to do here, so let's run those commercials. Brad and Bill and Carolyn will be my next callers.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right. Back to gardening. It's going to be Brad and Bill and Carolyn. Brad is first in line. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
So my question, similar to your last caller before the break with a little bit of a twist, the last few years with all the cold and freezes and so forth, we've lost a lot of various plants in backyard particularly, and decided to get preemptive this year with some lantana that we had just put in this past summer, and they did really well. I mean, they had literally exploded. Were probably double the size when we planted with the freeze coming. So we went out and bought some plant coverings, which we've not used before. These are it's a plant blanket or a blanket. It's it breathes. It's very dark, kind of a forest green color and so forth. I don't know if they're really waterproof or not, but just loosely draped them over four plants and held them down with rocks. And this was before the cold weather hit. And they stayed on through the rains that we had much of last week. Well, when we took them off, my wife was just sick with what she saw. They had literally, and they were in full bloom before this, had the leaves had shriveled up, the blooms were gone, and almost kind of a black look to the leaves. And just wondering, I don't know if there's anything we can do or even any thoughts. Are they going to even make it?
Well, first of all, they almost certainly will come out. I will tell you, I do not like that product. I've tried a lot of different row covers. In fact, Howard Garrett and I talked about this on the air a couple of weeks ago. The darker colored ones just don't seem to protect nearly as well as the lighter colored ones do. So if you do this again, go with a lighter color rather than a darker colored row cover to protect. Now, the good news about lantanas is you expect them to freeze back most winters, and most all of them will come out from the base without any problem. I don't even recommend covering them if it's going to be a hard freeze. I would put, you know, 3 or 4 inches of mulch over them, and that virtually guarantees that they will come out from the base of the plant. The fact that you covered them probably helped a little bit, but you expect lantanas are a great plant, and they're both trailing forms and upright forms, but they're going to freeze back most winters. That's just the nature of the type of perennial they are. So it's not unusual. Typically, you'll cut them back every spring to about 3 or 4 inches tall, and a little water, a little fertilizer. Virtually every year, they come back, and each year they tend to grow bigger and bloom better than they did the year before. So don't be too heartbroken over how they look now. They almost certainly will come back for you. And, you know, if we have severe weather forecast next year, just get out there with a couple of bags of compost and bury them with that. The top's always going to freeze, but the mulching will almost guarantee that they always come back.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I wish I had called a couple of weeks ago.
Me too. But that's I'm not surprised, you know. But when you invest in the covers, go with the lighter colors. They just seem to protect better, in my experience.
Appreciate that. So these, and they were quite large, probably upwards of 2 feet across. So you're still suggesting back that low, 3-4 inches. So, right down to the nub, huh?
I think you're going to find they've frozen back that far. Go ahead and put a little fertilizer on. If you want to water them in with this product called Super Thrive or with Garrett Juice, those things will help them come back out. But it's very typical for the bushing lantanas to freeze back. The trailing form doesn't normally freeze back as much, but this was such a cold, cold spell that even the trailing form's frozen back this year. But most all of them are going to come back out again.
Okay, great. Do you have a moment for a quick, long question?
Yes, sir.
So just in preparation for kind of a rehab, we have a mix of St. Augustine and Bermuda over time, erosion and so forth, a lot of bare spots, thin and so forth, and I'm hoping to make a run at this spring, you know, with a combination of fertilizer, compost, you know, et cetera, aeration to get things going again. I'm just
Don't worry about the aeration. That's effort money you don't need to spend. The compost aerates naturally and does a better job of it, but I wouldn't put it off. I mean, today would be a good day to start on that program. Organic fertilizers bind to the soil, so it's certainly a good time to put them on. Cooler weather, compost is a lot more fun to spread than it will be after it warms up. So it's a good plan, but don't feel like you have to wait to do it. It can be done any time now.
His line dropped, Bob. We can move on.
All right. Jimmy tells me that line cut out on us. So, Bill, you're next in line. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Morning, sir.
Hey, the dreaded nutsedge question. I've got nutsedge taking over large portions of my lawn, which is Bermuda.
Right.
Of course, it's all seems to be dormant right now, I think, including the nutsedge.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm trying to figure out how to get a handle on this stuff. Now, in the past, I've used a product called Tenacity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to hear what you think about that. It seems to bleach out the chlorophyll and kills the plants that way. That has worked.
I don't know what the active ingredient is. I suspect it's like Image or Manage, and it's a toxic product that ultimately will be bad for your grass. Keep your grass more on the dry side. Nutsedge loves moisture, and boy, there's no sense in doing just about anything right now. Our soil is so wet. But the only thing that we have found that really dependably gets rid of the nutsedge is a program of running the soil drier and periodic applications of molasses. It can be dry molasses or it can be liquid molasses. Fairly strong. If you use them the liquid, like half a cup to a gallon, and drench the nutsedge thoroughly with it, it creates just the ideal condition for other grasses to grow, but the nutsedge does not like it at all. And that's the only thing that I've ever found that will dependably get rid of it on a long-term basis. But like I say, until things start drying out, nothing short of nuclear weapons is going to do much to it. So at this point, there's not a lot to do.
Okay. What about the hydrogen peroxide thing? I read some of that on dirtdoctor.com. Does that work?
You know, I'll make a note to ask Howard about that when we'll be talking to him here in about 15 minutes. I have not really tried that on nutsedge, but I don't know. Let me ask Howard and see if he's found a good way to use hydrogen peroxide to do that.
Sounds good. Aeration, you mentioned to the last caller that's not something you would invest in. Liquid aeration, what is that doing, and does that actually work?
Well, the liquid materials, Garrett juice, molasses, Medina's soil activator, Medina Plus, those things naturally aerify because they increase the microbial life in the soil, which has a natural aerifying effect. And that's all that I recommend. Compost is full of things that's going to provide a natural aerification. But if you're looking for other products, Garrett juice is wonderful. Medina's Medina Plus is just an improved form of the Medina soil activator. Works really well. And the molasses that you're going to use to work to control the nutsedge is going to do an awful lot to do the aeration, far better than the so-called core aerifier will. Plus, it's not going to mess up your sprinkler system and things like the aerifier tend to do. Bill, I'm going to let you go so I can get Carolyn here before the news break. Carolyn, got about 2 minutes. Hi,
hello.
Carolyn. Good morning.
Yes, I've got a couple of questions. Wireworms, they seem to get into my potatoes, and I wondered how to get rid of them.
Use beneficial nematodes at the time or before you plant your potatoes. Beneficial nematodes are totally harmless to you and to your plants, but they will control the wireworms.
Yeah, I've used beneficials for years, but now Colorado doesn't carry them anymore. And so the only thing I can get in my area are some of these dry things.
Well, use them. Whoever your supplier is, tell them that the Colorado folks just simply have moved to Oregon. And I believe they call it's now called Nature's Control. If you're used to dealing with them, it's the same company under a different name out of Oregon, and they do have the live nematodes. It's what we carry at the nursery, you know, here, so I know that they are available. They're not as much in quantity, but they're still out there. In the meantime, the dry ones will do something. It's a click beetle, of course, is the adult the larval form, and some of the dry ones probably will work, but I don't have a lot of experience with them. About 30 seconds till news. If you've got another question, go ahead and ask.
Yeah, I've got two real quick. Can I trim my Meyer lemon? I have to bring it in the garage, and it's hard to get through the gate because it's so wide. Is it okay to trim?
It's okay to trim. If you can wait till it's in bloom and leave the limbs that have the most flowers, that would be better, but you won't hurt to trim it now.
Okay, and do you have a large jalapeno that's good for poppers?
Big Bertha is probably one of the better ones, or jalapeno. Nacho Grande is another good one. Got to go to news. This is KTSA San Antonio.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, back to gardening on it's just a nice day out there. You're not even going to need a heavy coat. It's a little overcast, probably not going to see a lot of sunshine today, but it is going to be a good day to be outside. And if you're like me, I'm sure you can find plenty of things that need to be cut back in the garden. And, of course, there are things that you can be planting in the vegetable garden. And anyway, so many things to talk about, so I hope you're planning on having a great day of doing it. Right now, this is the time that we get to spend some time with our friend, the Dirt Doctor, Mr. Howard Garrett. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning, everyone.
And how did you fare with the little wintertime surprise? Just when we thought it was going to be a mild winter, San Antonio, I think, got down to about 12 or 14 degrees, and it was colder than that in the hill country. But then it got followed up with a real good rain. So all is not bad, but man, it's sure good. We were in Atlanta when all this was happening, and it was about that cold over there as well. But what are you seeing around the Metroplex?
Well, apparently we had about the same weather conditions as you did down there in the hill country. We got down close to 10, I think.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a little damage. I'm seeing a little cosmetic damage even under some of the floating row cover. So it got pretty nippy, and we're wet. We got a lot of rain yesterday and the day before. It's ground's as wet as it can be right now, but. Hopefully it'll just kind of level out and be cold but not ridiculous from here to spring. And we'll be able to get things in the ground and get them going for the summer.
Well, I'm with you, I hope. It's interesting. Some of the trees that like the Monterey oaks and Mexican live oaks, the foliage just almost totally browned out on the ones in the hill country. I don't think the trees are hurt, but things really look bad, but I once again, in looking carefully at the bark, I don't think there's going to be any long term damage on those. But I tell you, this 3 years in a row of having this kind of temperatures, I think that we're going to see a few different trends in gardening and plants. I think we're going to start seeing. And, of course, you know, y'all got a real hard freeze several years ago that I think kind of steered people in your area away from things like pittosporum and all. But I'm afraid a lot of people are just going to give up on plants that traditionally have been good here, like xylosma, like pittosporum, like flax lilies, things like that. It's unusual, but I'm kind of thinking we're probably going to start seeing more of the hollies, more of the things that we've been talking about over the past year.
Well, our global warming is more of a global cooling, which is actually more scary. So that may be what's going on. I'll tell you something interesting about the Mexican white oak. Mine didn't brown up too badly. It's got some cosmetic browning mm-hmm. on it. But my tree that's very similar that I'm frustratingly trying to get on the market, the loquat leaf oak, uh-huh. it doesn't even get any cosmetic browning or damage at all. It's unbelievable how tough that thing is. And it's faster growing than the Mexican white oak, the Monterey oak. I'm just really impressed with it. It's thinner. I don't know if it's unusual or not. Mine is, I've got a Mexican white oak in the front yard at the office, and in uh-huh. the back, the loquat leaf oak. The loquat leaf oak is thinner and taller. And I don't know if that's going to be a common characteristic or not, because the only other one I know of over in Fort Worth, at the Fort Worth Botanical Gardens, tends to be a little bit more upright, too. It's a wider than mine, but it tends to be a little upright as well. And that probably would be a good feature, because the Mexican white oak really gets pretty wide.
Uh-huh. And the loquat leaf oak I've not seen down here, and like you say, it's one that we just need to work to get into what the growers are producing. It is technically a white oak, isn't it? So it would be resistant to oak wilt damage?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Pretty How about right. acorns? Did your tree make any acorn crop, or do you know if the one over at the Botanical Garden in Fort Worth made much of an acorn crop this year? So many oaks.
The one in Fort Worth has been there about twice as long as mine has, and last time I saw it, it did have small acorns on it. Mine has not produced any acorns at all yet. So we'll see. It probably will, but it hasn't yet. Mine's not even 15 years old yet. It's remarkably big for how young it is. So we'll keep you posted acorn situation.
Well, I'm just thinking that would be an awful good encouragement for people to join the Organic Club of America if they thought they might get some acorns at some point along the way. I'll don't know that it'll do any good, but the growers are asking us more than they used to about things to offer, because they're a little frustrated because people are cutting back on some of the plants that we've considered the old faithful, reliable plants, so I'll sure put the loquat leaf oak on the list to try to see if we can't get them to grow it. Of course, that means it's about 3 years down the road before we have a big enough tree to really offer people to put out in their landscape, but 3 years there seems to go by in a hurry.
Well, we've been told about some growers that are growing it, but so far it's all real small sizes. So anybody out there knows anybody that's gotten into growing it, let us know, and we'll pass the word on, because the more people we get into it, the better, because availability is a big drawback.
Well, and that's what I tell anybody that wants to get into it. The problem is not lack of demand, it's lack of availability. If people will grow it, there is a big demand out there for it. And I guess one of these days we need to sit down together and just come up with a list that we can send to various of the growers and say, hey, these are things that we can almost guarantee you sales on if you just produce them.
Well, I think like you were talking earlier, I think this problem about certain things being damaged by the frost, I think, is going to move us toward using more native plants than we've even done in the past. And I think some of the growers have been a little reluctant to grow native plants because they're a little harder to propagate, they're a little harder to get to a sellable size. But this might help move growing operations that direction, you know, things like rusty black Alviburnum and Mexican buckeye and the things that you and I talk about quite a bit.
I would hope so, because those, they're not difficult to grow. I mean, not Mexican buckeye, I don't think I've ever planted a seed that didn't germinate and grow. And I've not tried propagating the viburnum. Have you tried propagating yours? I'm sure it'd have to be from cuttings, but it's just one of those things I don't have a good cutting source on, so I don't know how difficult they'll be to root.
I have not. I need to do that. I have talked to growers about rusty blackhaw by burning them, and everybody tends to say that it's harder to propagate and harder to get going. But you know what probably is they're just not used to that plant. They're used to doing, you know, the hollies and the typical things, hollies and viburnums and abelias and things that are the typical shrubs. So it's a great one. It's a great plant. Mine didn't have great fall color this year. It had okay fall color. You and I talked about fall color being inconsistent, and it was probably the most inconsistent I've ever seen it here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The big, beautiful cambio that's not too far from my office that gets most years, it gets red in the fall and holds its red foliage all winter long. It just kind of turned orangey red and then brown this year. It didn't put on a real pretty show at all. So we didn't have a great year here in Dallas Fort Worth for fall color for sure.
It was unusual, I guess weird is a better word down here, that early we had almost no color, and then we got two or three rains, not the thorough soaking rains that most people got this week, but we started getting a little half inch here, half inch there, and all of a sudden we had some pretty nice fall color, on, you know, like the flame leaf sumac as well as Mexican buckeyes around my ranch. Early on, they were nothing, but then they had pretty good color. It didn't last as long, but y'all had a little bit more rain through the summer months, but then you got dry as well. But when we finally got some rain, we finally had some fall color show up, but it certainly wasn't like it is some years, but seems like we say that all the time. Seems like every year is a little different. One thing that has surprised me, in looking around, I'm starting to see a few of the maples and some of the things are actually trying to, you know, have some buds expand. I haven't been back in town long enough to get out and see what the cold did to that, but we had things that were looking like it might actually be a little bit earlier spring, and I haven't had the chance to get out and look and see, you know, if the cold really set that back or not. Have you seen any of that?
I don't think there's going to be a problem with that, unless it was a plant, a tree in a container that you had out exposed. I told my listeners to be careful and wrap the trunks if they couldn't cover the entire plant and pot in a pot with a floating row cover. It sounded like you got from a caller I heard earlier got a little more proof about how bad that dark green stuff is compared to floating row cover of the plant. We had a little cosmetic damage in the vegetable garden. We had some cauliflower in full head. I should have harvested it. I didn't get around to doing it. And it browned to the outside edge of them, and there was some other cosmetic damage. And I had more real serious damage on Swiss chard than anything. I was very surprised about that. Don't know the reason it was covered also.
That is unusual. Well, the nice thing about cauliflower, you need to get Roberta to give you her recipe. She has the best cauliflower soup recipe I think I've ever had in my life. And that way, even if you get a little bit of that browning, you don't see it when it's in the soup. But cauliflower, in my experience, is the least hardy of the cole family plants. Brussels sprouts, by far, the most cold hardy. And then next in line would probably be cabbage and broccoli. And cauliflower, I'd say it'd start showing damage at least 5 degrees before the others do, but again, it's just cosmetic. It'll still taste very good done properly, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the broccoli wasn't hurt at all. It looks great. The kale, the dinosaur kale, is great. Most of the things are fine. And the elephant garlic that we talk about all the time, I didn't even cover it, and it didn't even get brown tips. It's tough as nails. One thing I was going to pass on to you, related to your bamboo conversation.
Right.
I'm about to do something with my bamboo. My program that I came up with a long time ago works really good, but I do an extra step every few years. The basic thing is in the spring when it's trying to invade the back garden and putting up, you know, 3 feet of growth a day.
Right.
You knock all that off or chop it off with a mattock. I use a little mattock that's about the length of a hatchet. It's the easy thing for me just to hit down on the base of the bamboo, and then I kind of chop around in the soil a little bit to see where the yellow runners are, which direction they're going. And then I use that same little hand tool to chop, and I don't try to dig it out. I just chop it in the ground into pieces, and it kills the primary runner situation. That way you'll get a little bit of feathery regrowth in the summer that you go out and trim away, but the main part of it is taken care of that way. And then when you see some green runners, the yellow comes out of the ground or gets real close to the ground and starts turning green, wherever you see that happening, cut that. And you can cut it with a sharpshooter shovel, just stab straight down, or with a mattock or axe or a hatchet or whatever you want. And it works pretty well. But over a period of time, there will be some primary runners that evade that control.
Yeah.
So what we do is we've got a concrete border that the black chain link fence sits on top of, and then it drops down to the forest of bamboo and the big compost pile I've got back there. We'll go on the house side of the concrete and dig a ditch. And in digging that ditch, you're going to run into a whole bunch of the primary runners. And in that case, you do chop them and remove them. And that gives you a whole lot better chance of controlling, you know, the overall invasion for several years after doing that. It'll build up, you know, over a 3 or 4, 5 year period, and you you do it every now and then. It really does make it easier to maintain.
And how deep do you feel that trench should be? How deep do those runners typically go?
6 or 8 inches at the most.
Yeah,
they're all
That's been my experience. People think they have to go down 2 feet, and I don't think I've ever seen a. And you know, most of them are up there within an inch or two of the surface. So somebody going down 6 inches, I'm sure would pretty much get everything that was there. So, and you say you do that probably what, every 3 or 4 years, in addition to just your primary control.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing to plan. Now, whether I actually get around to it or not, that's another.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite sayings. Do as I say, not necessarily as I do, because I don't know about you, the days just seem to get shorter. I need about 2 more hours in every day, 1 more day in every week, and then maybe I could keep from getting any further behind. And let's talk about a little bit about hydrogen peroxide too for nutsedge control. I had not really thought about it. We still recommend the molasses treatment, but, you know, it makes perfect sense because nutsedge, you know, likes anaerobic conditions, and hydrogen peroxide really works to put more oxygen into the soil. Do you have a recommendation as far as using that along with your molasses for nutsedge?
Yeah, I recommend it as part of the program. I think it's important to do. What you have to understand, people that haven't gotten into this yet, is that, like you tell people, it's a sedge and it likes anaerobic wet conditions. It especially likes conditions where the water is migrating down to a lower point and it hits a barrier, so it stays. You'll see that on the edge of golf greens, for example, where they've built the greens with sand and the water migrates over and hits, you know, the native soil. And you'll see the nutsedge the worst in those places. Mm-hmm. So doing the hydrogen peroxide treatment, a good thorough drenching, and the cheapest, most practical way to do it, just use the 3% stuff from the grocery store, mix it with water, and drench as much into the area as you can afford. People ask me how much to do, and I say, well, you know, at least a gallon for every 100 square feet, but it works better if you do more than that. And then you do the molasses treatment after that. So you tend to, with the hydrogen peroxide, start reversing the anaerobic situation in the soil. and then the molasses takes over from that and encourages even more. That's how it controls it. The nuts edge does not like nice, healthy, well-draining soil. A lot of people will argue that, but that's that really is the case.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. So you start with the peroxide to start with improving the aeration in the soil. And, you know, we can always go back. That's a place where I'd always go back with some compost tea or something like that, since the hydrogen peroxide does work against our microbial life. But, boy, compared to what a lot of people use to try to control nut sedge, hydrogen peroxide and molasses is so much better program than these toxic things. I should have written down I was not familiar with the one I had a caller mention earlier, but Image and Manage are the two that we seem to have the box stores around here pushing so much, and both of those are just, to me, they're just devastating to trees and other things, and we just absolutely try to steer people away from those.
Well, plus they don't work very well. I'll watch where those things are used on a regular basis on the golf course where I play and other places too, and they tend to brown up the nuts edge for a while, and then it comes right back.
Yeah.
When I first started looking into this years ago, I interviewed a whole bunch of people in the business, and I never found a contractor one that had used the chemicals for nuts edge tell me that they thought that it worked. So
yeah,
using a toxic product that doesn't even work, which is kind of the case with a lot of stuff, you know, we advise people to stay away from.
Well, it's sometimes it gets discouraging, and we were driving back from lunch yesterday and saw one of our big shopping areas here that in the past has had just some absolutely beautiful plantings, and man, all you could see was weed block. I know they're going to come back with rock on top of it, and it just breaks my heart to see how people are getting away from things that really are attractive. And there's so many things that are not that much work. There's so many good perennials and things out there, but boy, the landscape trends between the chemical use and just the big rock and things like that. I sincerely hope that we can emphasize to people just the pleasures that come from gardening. Not only does it make the environment so much nicer, but I just think about myself and my friends and the people I know that garden tend to be the most positive and the happiest people around. So if we just need to keep talking about it.
Well, people have wasted a lot of money on it as well. I think one of the big issues in the cities is that the cities are demanding drip irrigation. They're requiring it on a lot of commercial projects, and there's some places in the landscape where drip just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And one of them is big ground cover areas, and especially if they're on a slope. And I've seen a lot of money wasted doing that. So that's another thing we need to try to get people to avoid as much as possible. I'd rather see just mulch used than the rock that's been going in a lot of places.
Well, and just like we were talking about the difference in quality and efficacy of the row covers, the same thing's true with the drip. There are some products out there that being offered that just are not good quality and not going to work, especially when you're in an area with a lot of calcium in the water and in the soil. So just need to keep pushing quality and understanding what you're doing, and if you're having somebody else do it, get with somebody with the experience that can show you what they're doing. Down here it seems like all you need to be a landscaper is just a pickup truck and a plastic sign, and golly, I see some dumb stuff done, and I'm sure you see the same thing up there.
Yeah, it's common. The worst examples you see are tree care people that go in and over-prune the top of trees that don't know what they're doing at all. They cut out too much of the canopy. They lift too many of the lower limbs and make flush cuts. They just do a lot of bizarre stuff. And even some of my friends that live here in the Lakewood area that I see from time to time hire arborists that don't even go to the trouble to grind up the trimmings. They just pile it up all on the curb the taxpayers get to pay to have the city haul it off.
Quite frustrating. One of these days, if we can ever get people interested in producing some of the good books out there again, I think you could do a good book on gardening mistakes that I have seen. I think that would be a real good title and a real popular book. And it between us, we could come up with a lot of pages of good material, and that of course brings me to asking if there's been any progress. I know that it was, you know, kind of slow coming together because kept thinking of more and more and more things to put into your latest work, but any progress on seeing that in print one of these days?
Yeah, a little bit. The company that was going to finance it has just vanished for some odd reason, and one of my clients, design clients, has shown some interest, and we're going to meet and talk about it sometime soon. It may turn out for the best. I may end up making it even more of a more thorough book than it was going to be. And so it's going to happen. He's fired up about doing it, and he's the kind of guy that when he says he's going to do something, he does it. He's been very impressive. He's the owner of the corporation. I showed you the community garden that I've designed.
Oh, great.
For him.
Yeah, yeah.
These mazes. Well, the contract on it's being signed Monday afternoon, and it's a real deal. So people will be able to see that within the next few months.
That's fantastic. I know I know what you sent me was an early version of the book. So I'm really excited about that. That it's different enough from your other books that it'll certainly be a good addition to everybody's bookshelf. And anything we can do to, you know, try to help that come along, please don't hesitate to let us know.
I'll keep you posted. We'll try to move it along. In the meantime, we'll just try to give everybody as much information as we can on dirtdoctor.com. By the way, one of the things that we're doing, I've mentioned this, I probably ought to mention it more often than I do, because, you know, you and I talk about the sick tree treatment and tree care and all as much as or more than any other subject. And for people that are just getting into tree care, whether it's shade trees or ornamental trees in pots or fruit trees, orchards, or whatever, the first thing I'd recommend everybody do is go to dirtdoctor.com. Look up in the top right-hand corner. We keep the Fabulous Tree slideshow there all the time. And it shows people my planting technique recommendations and then the stories on certain specific trees that have been interesting that I've been involved in. My ginkgo, my dwarf Japanese maple that I found was 6 inches too deep in the container when I took it out of the container, and all the way up to national champion pecan tree, and the 3,000-year-old Montezuma cypress in Oaxaca, Mexico.
It's
kind of fun. It's a lot of slides. You got to spend a little time, but it's there for free watching anytime anybody wants to go.
Well, two quick comments on that. I had somebody in the nursery this week that was talking about the Texas Bug Book that you and Malcolm did, and he said, "I like the stories as well as I like the information. There's so many good stories in there." So your storytelling is, yeah. And the other thing is, people should not overlook the videos that you've done too. I know you've got lots of different things, and the slideshows are great, but sometimes the actual, you know, seeing somebody pushing the shovel or, you know, using the air spade or whatever else, you've got some great videos up there, too, that people can certainly learn from as well. And if anybody just paid just a few bucks a year, joining the Organic Club of America opens up some other really good things there as well.
Well, one thing that kind of flies under the radar is my second online course that I did. The big one is 15 chapters and covers everything that I know anything about. But the second one is just on one subject. It's just on the sick tree treatment.
Right.
And it talks about how to identify the symptoms first, and then it talks about how to do the procedure step by step. And it's pretty thorough. It's very inexpensive, and so people can check it out under the red button at the top of the page of DirtDoctor.com that talks about books, classes, and my art.
There are many good things you do, Mr. Garrett, and just know that you are very much appreciated down in our part of the country as well. Hardly a I won't say a day, but there's not a week that goes by that people aren't in complimenting the website and the programs and all, and especially our little visit here on Saturday morning. So we always appreciate the time, and we always seem to find something interesting to talk about, but I haven't run out of topics yet. I think we ought to do this again next Saturday.
Sounds like a great plan. We'll do that. And in the meantime, everybody enjoy those healthy, wet gardens. We'll see you next.
Look forward to it, Howard. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, Jimmy, I guess we better get a break in here. Phone lines are open. We'll have time for a few more phone calls. And so you know the number, 210-599-5555.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster.
News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening. On it's just going to be a good day to be outside, cool enough to be comfortable. If you're spreading some compost, would be a good thing to do today. Soil's so wet, I don't know that I'm going to suggest doing a lot of digging or anything involving any heavy equipment, because you will leave ruts behind, but sure it's nice to have wet soil. But anyway, lots of things to do and lots of things to talk about. We've got about roughly 20 minutes left in the show. I'm going to talk to Brian, and then do have a few more open phone lines, so probably take two or three more calls. You know the number, 210-599-5555. And let's say good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, Bob. I've got a question for you about seeds and then one about worm compost.
Okay.
For the garden. So, seed question. I procrastinated and didn't get all the seeds necessarily ordered that I wanted to for my tomato starts. Looked in the cabinet. I have a couple from a few years ago. I think your answer is going to be legalized gambling is just present day gardening. But if I use seeds from 2022, what's the percent that they're going to be viable? They've been in a container that's been sealed in a cabinet.
It's going to be surprisingly high. So they were in a jar or something that, with the lid screwed on.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Because that has limited any dehydration. And that's what, destroys most seed, is just that seed dehydrates and, the tissues start to break down. So I'm going to give you probably 80% germination. Maybe even a little bit higher than that. If it was in the refrigerator, I would have, jumped that up to about 95%. But being closed up like that, where it hasn't been low humidity, hasn't been just totally dehydrating, I would, give them a real brief soak. In the case of tomato seed, probably not more than 5 minutes, and a little bit of Garrett juice and seaweed. But I think you're going to have an amazingly high percentage of germination.
So if this was yours, would you do 2 to 3 seeds per pot, or would you open it in a flat and kind of just capture the ones that sprout?
Either way, depends really on how much time you had. I grew up working in my grandfather's greenhouse, and he grew and sold a lot of tomatoes. And, back in those days, we had wooden flats that, and he would sow that seed fairly thickly and then wait until they got up and got their first true leaves. And that way we could produce, 200 plants in one little tray, whereas 200 4-inch pots take up a lot more room. So it really kind of depends on the time and effort that you want to put into it. If I were planting in 4-inch pots, I'd probably definitely go with 2 seeds per pot, maybe even 3 seeds per pot, depending on how many seeds you have and how many plants you're starting to grow. But if you've got the time to do it, you can sure produce a lot more plant in a much smaller area, in starting them out in a tray. And transplant is so easy on a tomato plant. Lots of things you can't do that with, but I just adjust it to what you have available in time, Brian.
Okay, it sounds good. Then about I found a local guy, so I'm calling you from Montgomery County, who does large-scale worm composting, and I do small-scale, but I was talking with him the other day, just asking him how much what he would recommend. Of course, he was saying like 20 to 30% of the compost you add could be worm compost. Is that overkill, or what would your recommendation be as far as adding to existing garden?
You know, it just comes down to cost. The only thing, absolutely the only thing wrong with worm castings is that they are expensive because they're laborious to produce. And if you're going to produce in quantity, you're going to, you know, be developing a screen that works. Just collecting the compost takes time, and it's gotten to where the most expensive thing in the world and the hardest thing to find is quality labor. So I think that you will see benefit from any amount of worm compost that you use, because one of the nicest things about it is that it is so high in microbial activity. It's just supercharged with microbial activity. As a source of organic material, you know, you get a lot more for your money with just a general compost, but just for, you know, just for a magic compost, that's what your worm castings are. And like I say, it's just because of the way the worm produces them and the high microbial count, both in diversity and in numbers in the gut of an earthworm, is just off the charts. So there's no such thing as too much, but it just gets expensive if you're using a lot of it, you know. I would say you would benefit from it as little as one part to 6 or 8 part soil. But if you could do one part for 3 or 4 part soil, you're just going to have the richest, best soil. I think what I would do, and what I would recommend doing, is go heavier for the material that you're going to use for your seedling trays, and then go lighter on it for what you're going to use as a growing medium, if that makes sense.
Okay, that's clear. I appreciate it. And then, Bob, random one, last one question I just thought about. I know you're a cookerized rain person. My outer cylinder on my gauge cracked during the
oh wow
freeze.
Yeah.
I got online and saw they have a new one out. I just wanted to see, have you tried that one out? I forgot what it's by, but it's the same idea as the original Cookerized rain gauge, but it has a true graduated cylinder inside, and it measures up to 13.5 inches. Have you seen that one yet?
I haven't seen that big one yet. Last one I bought was probably 6 months ago, and at that time I just got the standard one. You know, when you go on the Cookerized website, that little section, or that little, I think you click on, called Weather Your Way. You can buy a replacement, you know, outer cylinder. You don't have to buy the top and the graduated cylinder for the inside. So it's not like you have to, you know, it's a little bit cheaper at least, unless you want to upgrade to the bigger cylinder. But no, I've not seen, I think mine's still the one that holds about 9 inches of rain, and I've never had it get full. So I haven't seen any need. If I lived in Houston or, you know, somewhere like that, I might see a need, but it'd just be dreaming for me to think I'd ever have a rain that would fill up a 13-inch cylinder.
Yeah, we're getting 9 inches of rain for the year, I think, currently. This last one, we've got like 7 inches of rain. And I told my father, I said, hey, you know, whenever you're tired of it raining, let me know. I'll buy a new rain gauge.
Well, and the other thing, too, that I'd like to pass along to people, I am a supporter and fan of Cookerized, but sometimes I am out of town, like I have been for the, you know, past, 14 days or so at gift markets and things like that. And so I have to do my multi-day accumulation, but they say that you, and I worry about how much do you lose to evaporation in that case, but they say with the design of that gauge, you lose almost nothing to evaporation. So if you get to make that 2-week trip to Europe or something like that, the amount of rain you have in the gauge when you get back is probably a pretty good reflection of how much rain actually fell.
I think that's true. I think that's a good, you know, science experiment between effusion versus diffusion.
Yeah.
I agree. It would be very, very small. That hole's not but, what, quarter of an inch, if that, in that top of that, or in the bottom of the funnel.
Yeah.
So I agree. But anyway, Bob, you got some more gardeners in the line. I'll pass them on. Thank you for your insight.
Well, it's always, have a great day. Always, A pleasure, and you do the same, sir. Jimmy, let's see. I see that Ron hung up. We need to get one more break done here, and probably time for a couple more callers after that. If you've been dialing, you know the number, 210-599-5555. We'll be right back.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air.
News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening on, it's going to be a good Saturday out there. Getting a little lighter. I actually see a little bit of blue sky up there. Hope that moves over. And anyway, it's going to be a great day to be out. Let's talk to Angie. Good morning, Angie.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I live in Atascosa County, and I wanted to know if it is too early to trim back my grapes and peaches and plum or wait for a couple weeks.
No, I would very definitely get it done as soon as possible. On citrus, I would not. Citrus, I like to wait until it's actually in bloom so that you can leave the limbs that have the most flowers and take out the ones that are going to have the least if you have to prune. Pruning is strictly optional for shaping. But on peaches and plums, as you well know, you're thinning really rather
right.
than pruning, and this
That's
is the ideal ideal time to get it done.
Okay.
Same way on your grapes. Your grapes, you may thin them up to 90%, the commercial people do, but this would be a great day to get out and work on those things. But I would not put it off. I think the sooner the better, because if we get a week or two of warmer weather, those buds are going to swell. And if your luck is like mine, I'll get really busy just at the time that I didn't get around to doing it. So that'd be a great thing to get done today, Angie.
Okay, that sounds like something I'll definitely do, because the sun is coming out. It's a beautiful day.
Yes, it is. How much rain did you get this week?
We got, I think my husband told me an inch and 3/4.
Oh, really?
Wait, all together. He measures it.
Yeah.
Hey, John, how much rain did we get? Oh, he's telling me almost 5 inches. Okay.
I was going to say, a lot of people down your way got 4 to 6 inches of rain.
Yeah, that was overnight, I remember. Yeah. All together, 5 inches.
Well, I tell you, we all needed that so much, and it's one of the nicest things. This week was a really widespread rain. It wasn't just, you know, the guy over here got 2 inches and I got 0.2 inches, but I'm glad you got a good, thorough soaking rain, but that makes it even more important that you get your pruning done as soon as you can, because if we get 5 or 6 days of warm weather, warm sunshine weather, you're going to see those buds really start to swell. And if you have your pruning done by the time that happens, you'll get a better fruit crop.
Yeah, we'll go out and do it now then. So great. And my asparagus is a little slow. Should I worry or just be patient? Like, that's what you're supposed to do.
And all we can do is be patient. If you haven't fertilized it, do go ahead and fertilize it. But if you have a soil thermometer, you're going to find out the soil is still really pretty chilly, and that's why the asparagus is just waiting. But, you know, again, a week of sunny weather with that soil warming up, you'll see a big burst of growth on the asparagus. But air temperature is not as important as soil temperature, and that soil temperature is still pretty chilly.
Oh, my husband's saying 4 1/4 exactly. He looked at the gauge. That's his record. 4 1/4 inches.
That is outstanding. And let's do it again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure. Let's hope for a repeat of that in about a week or 10 days. And just carry that all through the spring.
You betcha. I agree.
You get out and enjoy, Angie. Thank you for the call this morning.
Bye.
You're
welcome. Bye.
Bye. All right. Golly, just let's see here. I don't think anybody else is on hold. Let me check that real quickly. No, it looks like I get to talk to you for a minute or two here. Repeat a couple of things. I was talking about starting the show. As far as planting potatoes, everybody's anxious to plant potatoes. Hill country, I'm going to wait a couple of weeks, but potatoes are one thing that can sprout, freeze back, and sprout again. If you're south of San Antonio, you're probably okay to plant. San Antonio area, I'm going to give it about 2 weeks. But basic method of planting potatoes, you do want to get seed potatoes wherever you can, because the potatoes that show up in the grocery store, they used to flash freeze them to keep the buds from sprouting. Nowadays, they do it chemically, but The potatoes that you see, at least other than the organic sources, they will have been chemically treated so the eyes don't sprout, and that is not what you want. If you get what's called certified seed potatoes, which is what most of your nurseries are going to have, they're cheap. They're probably not much more expensive than what you get in the grocery store, but they are free of disease, and there are several different blights that the potatoes can get. Plus, they do have nice live eyes. So get good potatoes. Cut them, when you're ready to plant, cut them in sections so that each section has at least two eyes, if at all possible. Take those little cut pieces and roll them either in wood ashes, which is what's been done for many years, and it's still fine. But if you want something that's just a little bit better, that same powdered rock phosphate that we put underneath the tomato plants, that is a great thing to roll your little sections of potatoes in. Really gets them off to a good start. And plant them. Don't plant them too deeply. I know if you're from up north, you plant them way down deep because the soil is so much more likely to freeze. Here, I try to plant about an inch below the surface, and that's all you need to do. Now, as they sprout and grow, many books, many people will talk about banking the plant, which basically means piling dirt around it. At this point, we're not worried about coming up above the root flare because there's not really a root flare on a potato plant. But people will bank the soil up 5 or 6 inches high. I've never seen that really increases the number of potatoes or the quality of potatoes. So whether or not you do that is strictly up to you. The one thing that you do need to watch is as the potatoes develop, some of them will develop very close to the surface of the ground. If you can actually see the potato, cover it up either with mulch or soil, because anywhere that little developing potato is exposed to sunlight, it will start forming chlorophyll, and that basically ruins it as far as the potato that you want to eat. So mulching is good on your potato plants. Whether you actually bank it up or not is up to you. As those little potatoes grow, if you like, you can periodically just go probe in the soil around the base of the plants. You'll find little potatoes that are roughly the size of a golf ball or a little bit larger or smaller. If you want to have some fresh new potatoes, just pop them out of the ground. It will only slightly reduce your production. Your bigger potatoes are going to form directly underneath the plant. So especially if you've planted a good long row of potatoes, nothing wrong with going through and harvesting a few of the little ones during the season that they grow. After they've been growing for, somewhere between 10 and 15 weeks, that's when you're going to start finding lots of little potatoes down around the base. Leave the plants, fertilize periodically. Watch for the so-called potato bugs. You don't need to spray. You can, if you have to spray, use a little bit of spinosad. But typically, we're seeing enough ladybugs around. You're probably not going to have much problem with them this year. But if you spray, nothing stronger than spinosad on there. We're not interested in pollination or anything like that, so just a little spinosad soap will take care of the problems. I'm out of time, but Martin Bama will be along very shortly with all the answers to your home improvement questions. I'll do this again tomorrow morning at 8, right here on KTSA Radio, San Antonio, Texas.